You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, 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 dear listeners, to this particular Tuesday session. For some reason, I am energized. I've got a lot of energy. No, it's not Tuesday. My goodness, how could I be stuck a day later back in time? It's Wednesday. Apologies for that, guys. I was, you know, it would have been a very bad April Fool's Day to continue on from the, not so kosher discussion that Helmut and I, Helmut technically placed a landmine there for us yesterday, specifically the other discussion that I would like to, for now, just avoid. But welcome to this particular, key and important discussion for today, for The Home Run. And as you know, you're in our company from 4 to 7. A little bit later during this particular first hour of The Home Run, we will be crossing over for a special engagement, an interview, specifically with a representative from Intercape, the Intercape coach service, and we'll be talking to Mr. Khomotso Rapetso a little bit later. That'll be at 4:30, just so that you know. But welcoming Helmut in. Helmut, how you doing?
All good, how are you?
Don't show the sweat. I won't switch over yet. Oh, it's good. It's not yet on us. But yeah, I won't show the sweat as yet. You know, that's on your brow. But yeah, how you doing? How do you feel about today's discussion specifically? Because I actually like the two introductory discussions before Governor Ibinge, stepped up to deliver his address. Specifically the part where the council member went like, for all the residents, in front of their computers. No. No. This should be in front of their television. I thought that, it's an honest, it's a small typographical mistake,
You know what's my favorite part?
Yeah, what?
The governor's reaction.
What, he was cracking it up?
He was this close to losing it.
Because you can see that.
He was holding on for dear life. Yeah. He even ended up facing the other side.
Look, it's honest. Look, I'm sorry. We won't mention the councillor's name. Just, in terms of ensuring that we don't have a welcoming party at our studio gate.
We talk for a living.
But it was some, some nice comic relief.
Oh yeah, it was. Thank you very much.
But I also liked primarily the lecturer that was interviewed.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
The metallurgical expert
from the UNAM campus. José dos Santos.
José dos Santos, yeah.
Yeah. Agostino Nieto was before.
Was before.
Santos. Just so you know that, Amo.
So it was Agostino Nieto, then
José dos Santos.
Dos Santos for and Jesus was this close to coming.
Do you think he was in close contention with Museveni?
He was very close.
Would he have been closer if he stayed on or with Paul Biya, or would he have been closer with Museveni?
I don't know when these guys actually came to power. I know that Museveni is about, 3-4 decades?
Because technically Museveni is thought to be, he's thought to be in the 30-somethings, but Paul Biya, mm-hmm. which I believe is the longest serving, has been for 40 years. When the last time we checked last year, when we had that discussion, he was at that stage for 40 years.
Jeez.
Yeah. But we're not talking about African leaders.
Here to talk about...
We're here to analyze Oshana's State of the Region address.
I'm here to analyze. I'm here to
chop
just,
it up.
Look through the numbers, which are very, very, very interesting in terms of investment. And,
Okay, you do the investment, Samut, because the governor cited that he's got three major urban centers in his region. And they all walk in a line, basically. So it's Washakati, Ongwediva, Ondangwa. All of them play their own particular roles. Except for, who was it that said last week that these three towns have to make up their minds and just become one super settlement? I don't know. Namibians.
I don't think we have a population that size.
No, but Namibians. No, well, Hamoud, if you all, if, for all of us that have been to those three particular,
I get the close settings, proximity, but
I know, Hamoud. Technically, it has the potential of merging together. For example, to look like what happens in South Africa with Pretoria, Midrand in the middle, and then Johannesburg. They.
So it's just.
You think it's just one massive urban settlers.
They basically converged in some kind of, you know, a panorama.
And how
you
my
can't
sister
tell where we are, I mean, which one ends,
and
which
one starts
where, and which one starts.
And
where.
My sister explained to me, Midrand was like what Windhoek is now doing with farmland, buying up farmland around it.
Yeah.
Midrand was farmland between Johannesburg and Midrand and Pretoria, and literally there where my sister once stayed. Have you ever heard of a goose? Shepherd or goose, caretaker. A guy would walk past with like a flock of geese early in the morning and late at night and late in the afternoon. And these geese would be like worse than cows. Cause you would hear with cattle and goats, you would hear the, you know, the meh and the mooing the whole time, which would be, you know, in reasonable, like sound levels. But when it comes to geese, these guys are like singing at the top of their lungs, announcing to the world, on just you show, we are here. We are it's just geese. It's the worst choir that you can ever ask for. And I'm so talking I'm talking about 15 geese at least.
No, that's a lot of birds.
So, and then I asked the question, what's up with this guy here in a metropolitan area like in South Africa? And I didn't understand the concept back then in, what was it, 2005? I didn't understand the concept of urban settlements can technically merge with each other.
Yeah.
As long as their administrations are separate. And I was explained, this was farmland between, even Sandton was farmland, which is Africa's richest.
So it was the urban expansion that pushed
And this is urban expansion since the 70s and since the 60s. And South Africa has had this rapid, specifically around Johannesburg. It has had, because Johannesburg's nickname is Mr. Gold City, or the City of Gold in Africa, primarily because of the gold mines that are still active in the middle of the city. 100 years ago, Helmut, can you believe it? Gold mining for more than 100 years?
Gold mining for more than 100 years, and we're still talking about development. Okay, colonialism, long story.
Lost our story, Hamu. Yeah. Just leave it, just leave it. We are back on the Oshana topic.
Yeah, so let's talk about Oshana. Let me hear what I was waiting for, man.
Which was what?
A tannery.
Update.
I got door.
Lost our hood, Hamu. Leave those things. You are looking for trouble. Please.
Look,
you really want us to be verongelukt here in front of the gate?
No, look. There was actually a lot of information that was provided, but much of it leaves at least me personally with a lot of questions with regards to. You know what? Look, I want to hear more about those statistics, but I understand that this is just this is just an address. You know, you can't cover everything all at once, from education, health, infrastructure expansion, and they have the one that's being built from the ground up. And this is across all SOEs and that's that are in your jurisdiction and all the and all the different ministries. He started off interesting enough for me with with the security.
Okay, go on with security, Hamu, because I'm strictly going to focus on the difference between where he started and what that lecturer.
Actually, let's start with the lecturer, because he did point out something interesting, because you can tell he's speaking from an academic
perspective.
Perspective. Which is why he kept emphasizing the investment into research.
Into knowledge-based and innovation centers.
Research and innovation. Research and innovation. Because, when it comes to intellectual properties, there are only two ways that we can, there are only two ways to industrialize. It's either you buy what has already been invented, or more like acquire intellectual, permission from the inventors or the investors on academic institutions that invested time, knowledge, and money into this type of into these inventions or technology, or you invest a lot of money into your own research and development. Both of which are expensive, but. But the bright side is your own research and development. It gives you, expands your local knowledge base. Not just that, but the breakthrough that you get, it's just yours.
Yeah,
you don't have to play some kind of franchise with regards to paying anyone for any type of technology that you seek to adopt. So you can tell the professor is looking at it from, in the line of academic, this is where we should start from. How about we just start from here instead of just saying, okay, we want to develop this and this and this. Yeah, but then we start coming up with reasons like we don't have the money. More like whatever that we would like to invest into, we have to use some type of technology which we don't have, which we need to acquire property rights or intellectual property rights for us to adopt. So you can tell, looking at it from a research and development, from an academic standpoint, a development, it makes a lot of sense, especially in terms of industrialization.
It is. He also greatly emphasized, and this is sometimes where I also have to ask the question about my other colleagues in the media, specifically from state broadcasters.
Yeah.
They go and interview someone, and then that person either doesn't give much.
Yeah.
For example, when we looked at the commas, the CEO of City of Windhoek was like very coy. He was like, no, we will wait there. Every time some of his responses were, no, we will hear now from the governor. We will hear now from the governor. And you could see that the person interviewing was trying to lure. They were standing ready with a fishing rod going like, I'm here to participate in the annual bass challenge in this interview.
Yeah.
But we obviously saw much of the particular information coming from the governor, from Governor Nyoma at that stage.
Yeah.
And this is also the other sort of like, a difference between the Commerce Sora and the Oshana Sora. With the Oshana Sora, Governor Ipinge has to be technically more involved with the constituencies as well as also the major urban settlements of his region.
Yeah.
Which actually gets me asking questions. I want to see a map quickly of our regions. Omuthia is the administrative capital of who? In which region does Tsumeb fall in? Because Tsumeb is not in Otjotjontjuba. Grootfontein is.
Wait, Tsumeb is not in Otjotjontjuba.
They moved the regional border to past Tsumeb.
Oh yeah, I looked up the regional borders. I think it's up until 1992.
Yeah,
Tsumeb. Yeah, they looked wildly different.
Yeah, Tsumeb at one stage was actually in Otjotjontjuba. Then they moved to Otjotjontjuba. The Otjotjontjuba / Oshana, and I think it's the Oshana, because Ohangwena is their capital is Enana. I just have to be sure whose capital is Omuthia basically. Is it Omusati basically?
Oshikoto.
Oshikoto, yes. Tsumeb and Otjotjontjuba is Oshikoto. Also named after the lake, basically.
It's my favorite pet about that word.
Yeah.
It sounds similar to the word thikoto in my language, which means trailer.
Man.
What?
I think you need to take your chair back. If you're gonna lay landmines for us every day, since yesterday. Do you know that some journalists were still talking about that thing, that discussion of ours? Not our discussion.
Yeah.
The subject that fueled our discussion. Our first part of discussion.
Marginalized discussion, yeah.
No, not the marginalized discussion. The other discussion around our men's competition with babies.
Well, it's a whole week, so it's fair to still talk about it.
No, it's fair. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm on.
Just a note.
Just as long as you don't use your trailer joke.
No more trailer jokes.
But I know trailer will show up somewhere. But still, yeah. The important thing is now, when we have to look at some of the things that the governor cited, for example, like the aggressive infrastructure and services expansion that they obviously conducted. Mm-hmm. These are things primarily the region is technically smaller than Comas in comparison to what Governor Nuyoma had to relay. The region, obviously, their region technically is 800,000 people spread across the region. We have 500,000 people concentrated in one spot.
Yeah.
How about that, Oshana? How about that? And secondly, it's a discussion also primarily of what has been already going on. Because some of these discussions like water access points, electricity expansion points, electricity access expansion points, further road construction and improvements on said particular roads, and then land delivery, and the other particular related developments taking place are things obviously that you can assume have already been in the pipeline and or have already been in operation.
Yeah.
What is important is you can technically see how some of the comments that people have made at one stage 2 weeks back about these three urban centers just having to tell each other, between each other, guys, you know what? Let's just become one massive urban center.
Yeah.
I would actually agree.
Mm-hmm.
And partially not agree. Reason being, the example of South Africa that I explained, each one keeps their administrative sovereignty separate from each other, and they each produce their own unique picture and facade about what they want to do. For example, Amut, if we stop off at Ondangwa, the last time I was in Ondangwa, which was back in last year, our town planning has to start making sense. For some of our towns, Enana has got a plan, and I know Enana is on Ohangwena. Enana has a plan, but when you get to Omathia and Ondangwa, you are scratching your head because you don't know if it's the national highway that got there before we decided to put a urban settlement there, or the urban settlement was there, and the best course of action to channel a national highway through the settlement was to position it right there.
Yeah.
Now, back in the first time I was in Ondangwa, I was in 2016. Then it was explained to me that they had this rapid, what's this thing's name? Them and Ongwediva. They had this rapid expansion plan to expand the town limits for both. And immediately outside of these two particular towns, you had the communal land areas where, you know, traditional huts and settlements, family settlements and the likes were positioned, which made things tricky because now as a town, you've got to compensate the people and tell them, listen, we want to buy your land. So you've got to move.
Yeah.
And as you are moving, let's not have bad relations with each other. It's just, the town is going to grow. We envisage this and we've got to formalize our limits because that's what we've got to do. And there's been, even here on Eagle FM, we had those various particular talking points of the difference between, not the difference, but how this particular land expansion and land acquisition program, specifically by some of the, some of the local authorities specifically are, going about in terms of the compensation given versus the true value of the properties that then start materializing. But before we actually continue, guys, we're going to take a short break, which is going to get us into the planned interview, and that's specifically with Mr. Khomotso Rapetswa from Intercape. And we're going to be back right after this, connecting through to that discussion. Hamut, we'll quickly be back. Just letting you know,
yep.
Your listeners, we'll be back. And you can also follow this particular interview on our socials, specifically where we are streaming. But we're quickly going to be connecting in a short while.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Pura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And coming back, dear listeners, and specifically welcoming you back, and as promised, we step into the planned interview, as mentioned a little bit earlier, specifically that we will be conducting with Mr. Khomotso Rapetswa from Intercape. And before we actually start with that discussion, Mr. Rapetswa is the Senior Marketing and Sales Executive from Intercape's, I'll assume for Namibia. Khomotso, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
100% understand. Khomotso, today's specific discussion that we're going to have right now is going to be helping the listeners understand specifically all the great particular news that's coming from Intercape and specifically some of the important developments associated to it. But before we start, could you kindly just tell us a little bit more about, to the listeners specifically, of your role at Intercape and as well as also, what are the latest developments?
Thank you once again. As you mentioned, my name is Khomotso, also known as the face of Intercape. So if you go on our social pages, you'll see the face of Intercape. That's me on Facebook, on TikTok. That's me. But in a nutshell, yes, thank you for the opportunity. What is exciting that we're bringing here, or what is exciting that we're going to discuss this afternoon, is the mere fact that we've got a route that's starting from Valdez up until to the north. So that's what we're going to be discussing in detail in terms of where it's going and all the stuff. So the people are aware of this beautiful route that we've started at Intercape.
100%. So, actually getting into that good news, Khamot. So, obviously, you've given us a little bit of a glimpse, a little bit of a, you know, of a sweet and an appetizer to taste on. What does this big news, that Intercape is willing to share with us and the listeners today?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yes, I did give a bit of an appetizer. That's how I am. I just give you a bit of a glimpse so to get your mind running a bit. But yeah, so the route starting from Bavos Bay, then Swakop, then you get the stops along the way, Umaruru, Otavi, Tuneb, Osakati, Elima, Arandas, Okahau, Oshikuku, you know. So we go all up until to the north, Okahanja and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, that's a route that we're starting at Intercape, and that we want people to be aware of this route that it's not only for Intercape, but it's for the people. We've heard the cry. We've heard people asking, when are you starting this route? When are you starting this route? All I can just say this afternoon is that we have heard your cry. We are here for you. And let us take you home in style, in luxury, in a most professional manner. You know what I mean? Mm. So that's why we're here.
100%. This then obviously also leads to the partial explanation you also provided in terms of the why. Intercape obviously is very synonymous with Namibia, meaning that it has been operating for a long time. Why has the company decided to introduce this new route only now?
As I said earlier on, we've heard the cry. We basically saying to the people, yes, we've heard you. Now is the time for us to start it. Because, you know, when you start a route, you don't just start a route without any research, without any understanding of who travels, who does not travel, who's your target market. So we've done our research. We've identified our target market. We feel as an organization that it is a time now to implement the route also before and stuff like that, so that it gets momentum, people are aware of it. Mm. So the time is correct because of the research that we've done as an organization.
Yep. And specifically also looking at the some of the particular developments that you cited, like it's coming closer to the end of the year. This also takes into consideration in terms of, the next question, which also highlighted some particular insights from passengers and from consumers. Why should the passengers, in our next question, Khomotsa, why should the passengers also choose Intercape over, you know, the possible competition that might be operating currently?
I'm going to be very simple. Safe, dependable, affordable.
Mm.
That's how it is.
Mm.
That's how we stand out from other competitors. Safe, dependable, affordable. And, of course, the luxury of it, the professionalism of it. You know, as I said earlier on, this is for the people, and that's why we're here.
Mm. 100%. We then obviously get into like the nitty-gritties, specifically looking at the ability to access tickets and to make bookings. How can the customers book internet tickets, and especially those that would be traveling from the coastal areas? This would be the majority of Erongo, Walvis Bay, Swakopmund, Arandas, Usikus, Karibab, and Omaruru.
Yeah. So thank you for the question. I've been waiting for the question. So we have a mobile
option. So we can't start backwards to front, but it's a good one, yeah.
No. I've been burning to hear the question because that's the main aim. But look, we've got a mobile office at Dunes Mall. At Dunes Mall, we've got a mobile office there that's running currently now. Then we've got a stock up in Swakop. We have an office at a Shell. It's going to be at a Shell garage. It should be up and running hopefully by Friday. But we have an office also in Swakopmund as well by the Shell Garage. Watch this space. We'll introduce the address and everything, I think, by tomorrow. besides the offices, we've also got our official app, Intercape official app, where people can also buy tickets from the app. Of course, our friends, ShopRite and Checkers outlets all over Namibia. So you can buy a ticket at any ShopRite and any Checkers all over Namibia. Also, you can buy a ticket at all our offices in Namibia. The nice thing about this is that, you know, when a person is sitting in Otapi, you can buy a ticket for a person who's in Barbers and just send them a reference number. A person who's sitting in Bintu can buy a ticket for a person from Swakop to Omaruru or Kahao, you know what I mean? So it's very simple and it's very reachable for people to buy tickets for us.
Yep. I actually like that as well, because just before our discussion, actually, I had a look at the sort of like the website in terms of, you know, looking at how you can budget for your ticket, your ride, and the prices actually, like you have like you said a little bit earlier, the affordability component is very obvious because it helps you with planning your prices. Which is something that, you know, I'm very impressed with as well, specifically as also being a former consumer myself. Yeah, but I was looking at Cape Town. Don't worry. don't worry. So Gomotso, we get into some of the other particular questions that we also still have. Does Intercape also currently have any special promotions or offers that for passengers that they can currently take advantage of during this new development as well?
Why not? So we've got this beautiful thing known as buy one, get one free. So what do I mean? So let's say you're traveling to the north, you want to take your sister, a friend, so you can buy a ticket and take a friend with, you know, or a family member with. So you might be traveling on the same day, same routes and same direction. You know what I mean? So basically what am I saying? Let's say I want to go to Oshikati, you know, and I've got my sister that maybe there's an event taking place this weekend in Oshikati. So I can buy the ticket, but the next place, my sister's ticket is going to be for free. That's how it works, you know. So I'm encouraging the listeners to take advantage of this so that they can experience this beautiful product that we have, this reliability that I'm talking about, this dependable I'm talking about. You know, the affordability, of course, I mean, why not? So at the end of the day, it is something different, something unique. And rest assured, with Intercape, there's always something different, something unique, something you bring into the market that will also always enhance and entice the market to travel with us at all times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. But this also then gets us into like future plans, because you also touched a little bit also about future plans, which currently also speaking to current promotions. What are Intercape's future plans for further expansions and potentially further improvements on services in the country?
Oh, there's a lot, which I don't want to take them out now on the radio, because, you know, some of the things will be still in work in progress. But of course, yes, there's going to be an expansion of the route. We're still doing some research. We're looking at how do we then also service other towns like your Rundu, your Katima, you know. So there's always research, always evolving, always working hard so to make sure that the clientele, whatever information that we get from the clientele, we can use it to advantage, get stats, get information, and we implement. The nice thing about Intercape is that we listen. So when people talk, we listen, we go to a drawing board, we plan, we strategize, and implement. That's the beauty about this beautiful organization.
100%. And then finally getting into our last question, Gomotso, if Intercape is well known for being safe, dependable, and affordable, why should the passengers trust Intercape with their travel needs in terms of looking at our last question?
Well, look. Besides the dependable affordability and the safety feature, I mean, the track record speaks for itself, you know, in terms of how we've serviced other routes, you know, how we take care of the passengers and their belongings and stuff like that. So there's a track record that we can always fall back on. And we pride ourselves. I'm not saying 100%, but I'm saying the track record speaks for itself. And yes, people can trust us. We are liable, and also how we handle the passengers' belongings, a bag, a parcel, you know, the specifications of where bags sit, where certain parcels sit. So it's not only for the people that we make things happen, but also for their luggage, you think about it, you know what I mean? So the track record speaks for itself.
And just before we conclude our discussion, Khumotso, if there's still something you wanted to add that I might have forgotten to ask or that you might have forgotten to mention, you can you still have the opportunity to do so.
Look, all I just want to say is thank you. Thank you to the people of Namibia. Thank you to everyone else that has trusted us with rendering a service for them and for us taking them home. But I just want to say to the people that we do have a call center in Namibia, and I can give you the number of the call center. The number is 081-950-2100. I'm going to repeat it again. 081-950-2100. This is our call center. It's running 24 hours. It's open. You can ask a question at any time. You can book a ticket at any time. They are available, ready to assist, ready to book, ready to make sure that your experience at Intercape is top-notch.
100%, 100%. And on that note, Khumotso, I'd like to say thank you, because it also provides me with the opportunity of also visiting loved ones at the coast from a Windhoek perspective. But I'm still looking at Cape Town. You know, it's better than visiting family.
But no, let's talk.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But on that note, Khumotso, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners here on Eagle FM.
It's a pleasure. I enjoyed it. And thank you again, once again, to the people of Namibia for trusting us and choosing us. Thank you very much.
100%. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that does bring us to the end of the interview, dear listeners. We'll quickly be taking a short break and we'll come back after this, heading into the rest of the Home Run program.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitiramo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka.
All right, so we are back to Home Run, right?
Yes, Helmut.
Yeah, now.
I just said that, Helmut.
I know. Now, let's dive into what is basically today's subject, and that's Oceania region's recent state of the region address.
Yeah.
And where a lot of things were basically pointed out, and I have, and before we went for that interview, we're talking about the professor addressing things from a research and development academic point of view in relations to what he expected from the governor,
yeah,
or what he expect the changes that he would like at least from his point of view to see taking place in his region.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, after that, you know, the governor came up, you know, the short intro and a very wonderful prayer from a man of God who wanted to sing, but he was told not to because it was a special event. And
then he was told this is not the platform. This is a special council engagement.
Yeah, but well, that was the right place for a solo. But they were like, you know what, this is too special for a song. So, but anyway, after one of the first things that the governor, tackled in at the beginning of his address, and he went very. The beginning part was very general and predominantly political. I started following everything from when he started giving statistics.
Yeah.
Now the first one was, the region has reported a 13% reduction in crimes. A 13% reduction. Now this state of the region address basically looked at the progress and the challenges that's being observed in the Oshana region.
Mm.
This analysis were all compiled information coming out of the 2025-2026 financial year.
Mm.
Yeah. So, from 2025 to 2026, and for the month of June, at least that's what I'm looking at here in terms of the information that was used, that the region has reported a 13% reduction in reported crimes, dropping from 11,894. To 10,260. So basically from 11,000 to 10,000, basically generally. Or if we round it to the nearest whole number, it will be from 12,000 to 10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the governor also pointed out that offenses such as housebreaking and domestic, this is both for domestic residences, breaking in domestic residences and business, business settings in terms of infrastructure. There's a lot of breaking taking place, whether it's in business areas or domestic residences. That's still a concern that the region is facing.
I know that he didn't, expand much.
Thank you.
Because it sounded more like it includes the act of vandalism in some cases. Because you can also,
that's
a broken window can also be.
Look, that's where the expansion now comes in, because this I understand for a lot of reasons, one of them being time constraints. It's understandable at least that he glossed through. But the thing is, the more he glossed through all these topics, the more questions that basically came up. And that's not the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have one where he's talking about crime such as rape, domestic violence and sexual assaults declined by 12%. And reported cases declined by 759 from 759 cases 2024-2025 to 670 cases, which is about 11 to 12% decline. And I wanted to know, what is the decline attributed to? That question, when he made that point, that question pops up, and the next point just compounded the problem in relation to the confusion that I had with the point that he made prior to that. Because the second point he makes after that is, the first point he makes is reported cases declined from 759 to 670.
Yeah,
and the next point is delayed reporting of cases remains a challenge. So you have a delayed reporting. Is it the domestic violence report that we went through, the one that indicated that most of the victims know their perpetrators, and 90% of the time it's someone that they either know or they are related to. So this attributes to the fact that it's not surprising if you just do a research and find out that some of the cases go unreported.
Which brings us back to that report we looked at last year.
Yeah.
What's the one from One Economy? What was its name? Problematic Matters or something? It has a nice poetic title.
Title to it.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm referencing because that's one. The point they made there was that a lot of the victims in their, who suffers from these societal ills, they don't suffer from these problems because of total strangers. Yeah. 90 to 99% of the time, it's someone they know, it's someone they're related to. It's either a spouse, a brother, an uncle, and
it's not like, and it's not like just because there was a reduction recorded.
Yeah.
It's not like the actual activity has stopped.
No, it hasn't stopped. Look, I think that's where I have a lot of questions now because a reduction in any kind of crime is a good thing.
Mm.
But maybe it's just the curiosity part of me that would like to be interested into, what can we attribute this reduction to? Because if it's a good thing,
what is the reason?
then we can keep it up
yeah.
so that we can see even more decline
yeah.
with time.
Or further expansion.
Exactly.
Or resource allocation.
Yeah.
He actually also cited from a very good point, which and that was why I mentioned him just before the interview. These state of the region addresses, sometimes they have a very lovely, and I'm speaking now from analyzing from a communication perspective.
Yeah.
Because a communication perspective is about finding, what's that word? Uniformity in a presentation.
Yeah.
You see, Amut, let's for example say, you're an executive in a company, yeah? And now the big boss, let's say the CEO of the company, shows up, presents something. The vice CEO or whoever in second in command presents something. There's uniformity in what the CEO said, the number one to the number two. Now you show up here, let's say you are a production manager. You show up and you start talking about all the bad things. But these guys were giving you like a holistic picture of things cascading.
Yeah.
And your messaging is just going talking about, yeah, we need investment in HR department so that I can get the best quality people. And then people were asking, I thought you were going to present about the product, the packaging, the manufacturing, the actual thing. HR will present HR issues.
Yeah.
HR will do its presentation. Well, what are you presenting here for? So, the address itself.
Yeah.
And it started even with when we started dissecting the Comas region's address, that it seems that my fellow media professionals out there, they interview someone beforehand who speaks something in many cases, probably that would be for a whole hour unrelated to what the governor is talking about. And the governor has to go through sectors. Just to let you know, all governors, they break up things into sectors.
Yeah.
They go into sectors. But you go talk to one person who goes and talks to about a sector, a human development sector. They're at the end. Because human development is health and education.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the end. And we have to ask these particular questions. Firstly, people in the public sector who are brought up in the media landscape. How do you guys understand state of the nation, state of the region addresses?
Yeah.
How do you guys understand these things? Why do you guys go cherry pick one topic that ends up at the end of the menu of a governor's address? How do you guys? I know you guys are not here to defend yourselves. I really know this.
Yeah.
But how do you do this? How do you get me excited listening to a professor, an academic, and the governor starts off with crime statistics?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with metallurgy. Or the metallurgical sciences, or the
there's not a good transition taking place in terms of what's being discussed.
I almost use my everyday expression: absolute zero, Helmut. There's a major disconnect in terms of that lovely discussion
started off from here,
and where we cascaded into. Yes, with a few gaffes in between, like the counselor that read computer instead of TVs, and the religious leader that wanted to sing and dance at the end. because he was
feeling... I was waiting for that solo.
I was also waiting. I really wanted him to technically break it down because I was like, let's see. And then when I saw, is he Catholic or is he just one of those pastors that love having that thing?
Well, he was dressed like a father.
He was dressed like a priest. Mm. Just to hear that the governor addressed him as pastor, I was like,
then okay, now I'm confused.
Then he probably is. He's probably Lutheran because the Lutherans also have.
They have the same attire.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, I want to put the doctor's contribution, the academic's contribution to the one side of it because, the one key thing that he highlighted is that they've got 11 constituencies, 3 major urban settlements in their region of Oshana.
Yeah.
I see a lot of potential, primarily because
the
reason why I say I see a lot of potential, and let's if for now ignore that NIDA report from that standing committee of last year that we looked at,
yeah.
The one about the that had the volunteer workforce
leather. Yeah.
And the immortal leather is stuck. The immortal leather that's just stuck there in the factory, and nobody knows who's in charge, but everybody's here working, you know.
Man,
and it's a volunteer workforce, you know.
You think politics is boring? You don't know your country.
I even heard this other Ministry of Environment event I came from earlier today. One journalist said, you know, if you really want the best job in Namibia, go become a politician. I told him, yes, that's a good idea. Plus, your salary is tax-free. Did you know that? He said, really, Dwight? I said, yeah.
Homeboy is about
open
to
up
start
a political party. Your political party, just, you don't even have to submit any financials to Ministry of Finance or to even to NAMRA. Just submit it to ECN. Just make sure that you know when you and I dissected the reporting, the political party reporting, and we brought up the Electoral Act. And in the act, it just says, just make sure that you have your documents ordered. Just make sure that you keep your receipts and
the thing
all.
Is even for when it comes to that, they failed miserably.
Yes, they did. Three parties were literally deregistered, and they were warned multiple times. They were warned.
Yeah.
You've got to do this for the 5 years every year.
Yeah.
Not when you feel like it.
Mm-mm.
Now I have today. I've got a new theory about if you get informed. You see, Helmut, here's the lovely thing about Namibia's public safe service. It is always there to help you.
Yeah.
You know, my siblings have told me this. Specifically, if you are part of those Namibians who love capitalism, who view the public service as like this overbearing parent that wants to be involved in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, primarily because you are a Namibian citizen. But here's the other thing there. Every government agency, every ministry, every government office, whether it's NAMRA, whether it's Ministry of Finance, Inland Revenue, if that department still exists, whether it's the overall Ministry of Finance and the whole fiscal and monetary planning discussion of the government of the Republic of Namibia, they are there for your benefit. I'm not promoting you. Just know that, Prime Minister. I'm not promoting you guys. I understand why you guys exist.
Yeah.
But we have Namibians that don't understand that particular perspective.
Look, the whole debate between who should dominate not just the procurement, but let me just say the execution of developmental projects.
I'm making you famous,
now.
I'm returning the favor that you keep doing.
The thing is, I understand the confusion, or more like the debate. I understand what fuels the debate, especially if you look at the progress and service provision in terms of execution.
Yeah.
There's a wide gap in execution, in execution between the public and private sector. Take health, for example.
Mm.
In the public sector, it's known as sluggish, and in the private sector, it's known as, top tier.
Mm.
But you have to ask yourself, one question. Look at the patients being served by, in terms of, nurses and doctors, but nurses and doctors on the other side of the break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on, just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We come back, dear listeners, specifically there from the short break, yeah, just where Helmut left off. Helmut, you were focusing in on what the differences between a service provision
look like. Yeah, but look at it this way. If I was asked which one I would choose between, to dominate the Namibian economy in terms of project implementation, whether it's the public or private sector, I would go for both.
Mm.
And that's because if there's one thing that I have at least learned from Western economies and politics is, whichever dominates, you have to understand that you are talking about power here. It doesn't matter which direction you throw it.
Yeah.
If it's too concentrated in one direction, it's going to poison those institutions. If you push everything in the public sector, you are going to have a very sluggish everything, and corruption is going to go through the roof. Take, for example, the Lobito Corridor investment guys.
Yeah.
What's one of the reasons why they were complaining about, what's one of the reasons why they were complaining about why they should just hurry up with building the Lobito Corridor railway? Unregulated police roadblocks. People are just setting up roadblocks left, right, and center.
Why does that sound like what I observed in Zimbabwe? Roadblocks.
Look, the point I'm trying to make is that if you say, okay, you know what, let's just privatize everything.
So wait. Wach a biggie, Bas. Helmut, wach a biggie. Yeah. I almost ended that idiom that we have in Afrikaans. Wait a little bit, Helmut.
Yeah.
So you're telling me SADC was approved and is borrowing $600 million because of a bunch of unruly people who are putting up roadblocks.
No, it's one of the reasons. It's not the only reason.
Okay, it's one of. So what are the police doing in these three countries?
Look, that's what raises the question most. Because this was just said by one official, though, not the entire company, but which I found very interesting because you also find it on their website. That's on the Lobito Corridor Investment Promotion Authority.
Yeah.
I think that was from on the 24th of...
June or July.
Yeah, 24th of June or July 2024.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing.
I thought you would have said this year.
No, not this. Oh. Look, the question that brings up is, you have your investors that have this information on their website, and you are not doing housekeeping of your own security cluster?
Basically. You're not coordinating with them.
Yeah, what does that say about your governance? That's a sign that you have lost track of what's going on in your country.
Or that you have. No, not just track. You don't have control.
You are terrible at leading. Which makes you an incompetent leader.
Yes.
Which brings up a lot of questions about what else are you incompetent at?
At, yes. Obviously, yes. We're not talking about Oshana in this discussion.
No, we're not talking about Oshana.
We're highlighting...
Yeah, this is a Lobito Corridor.
Yeah, Oshana technically looks like a first world country with what we just described right now. Because primarily, it would. Because if the governor cites, and you was, how much you were gonna expand on the reason these crime statistics.
Before I get back to back to the crime statistics.
Yeah.
And he also said something interesting, but we'll get back to that.
Yeah. As long as it's not in competition, not our yesterday's joke.
No. That one. The thing is, if you look at privatization, for example,
yeah,
privatization is very good at implementation and execution in terms of time frame because they don't have to deal with the bureaucracy that you find for the most part in the public sector. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you over-privatize things, you end up with what the American prison system is going through, where you have private companies that are suing the government because they did not meet their incarceration quotas. That I find very ridiculous because I, as a government, wanted you to house... This is a correctional facility, not a condemnation type of thing. So the goal is to rehabilitate them, not to const... Because now, if you want me to supply you with prisoners... What you want is to turn citizens that I want to rehabilitate back into society into a cash cow. But over-privatize something, you end up with that.
Let's please be careful with the American examples.
Yeah. Look,
because America is capitalism on steroids. On Ozempic, that they are now also hooked on.
Now, they have not always been like that.
On cosmetic surgery,
yeah,
which they developed. They were
plastic surgery and all that.
That's why I use cosmetic. Now, you say plastic, is, it makes like, it's true.
Yeah, but if you make everything public again,
yeah,
you have bureaucracy that is going to go away, to borrow your word, on steroid.
Yeah.
Yeah. You push power in the private sector, the greed is going to push capitalism on steroid.
Yeah.
And you push everything to the public sector, the service provision is going to go sluggish, and the bureaucracy will push that sluggishness and terrible service provision on steroid. So I think the tricky part is finding the sweet spot in balancing between that public and private collabo, which I think the public-private partnership is a good start.
There is a concern,
specifically,
because you remember at the start of this year, I kept saying that you can see when you look at a policy in each of our ministries,
yeah,
and you go and look at every town, every region, and every particular development across Namibia, you realize that each ministry present in every region, they need to hire more people that need to do a specific job. For example, we looked at Ministry of Health. We realized with Ministry of Health, it would need more nurses. It would need more doctors. It would need more paramedics and first aid responders and ambulances. And besides the AI ambulances, that I know that was a far reach, but some of the MPs in Parliament last year wanted to crucify the minister. I don't know why you guys thought. She said it was a dream, possibly, to reach that level. We're not there yet.
Nowhere near.
Nowhere close.
Nowhere near.
Nowhere close. And even because even the safety record about self-driving vehicles is abysmal. It not even Works and Transport will acknowledge or approve such a plan.
Yeah.
So the concern that you can see. Oshana in terms of land size is a pretty small region.
It is.
But Oshana has three major urban settlements. It has 800,000 people to service, Helmut. It has 11 constituencies to service. Versus, for example, if you throw up Hartab in comparison and Karas in comparison, where they've got
800,000 or 200,000?
You said 800.
No, it's 200,000.
200.
I confirmed the figure that was used in the in the state of the region address is the one that you find on their Wikipedia page.
Is it correct? Wait, we will pull up our NSA, our lovely other Bible, the NSA census report, and then I'll just have a look.
So, population 230,801.
That can't be right, man. But still, yeah. Don't worry, I'm not disputing it.
No.
I'm partially disputing it because I'm not trusting what I wrote down. but let's look at 200,000, right?
Yeah.
Part of the thing that the governor cited was that they've also got a mandate primarily to modernize. Because you won't hear the governors mention this.
Yeah.
But from Comas to Oshana that we're now busy dissecting, mm-hmm, you hear in Afrikaans we say klein tong or klein stem, meaning it's the voice that you don't hear. It's the words that are not coming out, but you hear. You hear a different sentence being mentioned, but you can see there's a hint here, not just in body language, but also like in the suggestive reasoning taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, when we have a look at that first introductory part of the governor, it does hint a lot to a modernization realm.
Mm-hmm.
The modernization realm then speaks towards their aims in terms of ensuring that firstly the services are there, but that the other minister, that the regional extension offices of the ministries also play a more integrated role specifically in achieving these goals. The concern that I have is, first and foremost, which was the first concern I mentioned, specifically on Ondangwa. We have to take, and I'm saying this with a serious face. Let me switch over to my face.
Wait, so I'm still being famous?
Yeah, you were still there. You were still being famous. I'm going to say this with a straight face. Let's employ town planners in every town in this country, not just in Windhoek. Please, please, if you're a city of Windhoek, don't advertise any town planning vacancies. Let the other towns hire these people.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I say this, Helmut, is because the words, when I bumped into a lecturer and a few other, you know, officials, government officials in Rundu back in 2016, because I travel where the team and I that where I worked previously, we had to travel then from the north, from Oshakati, and then we had to drive all the way through across like this northern Namibia to Rundu. And we drove on that very empty and very isolated road, that road that ends, the tar road ends at a specific point, and then it was just gravel for like 100 Ks, 100+ kilometers. The guy highlighted there, if you send a kid from a rural or a least developed, okay, we've got a caller. Do you want to take a caller now? It's 5 o'clock. Yeah, let's take a caller right now.
Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Eagle FM. I was searching for you for the whole day.
You were searching for us from where, sir?
So, actually, I want to rest up my points there.
Yeah.
So,
you are on
then,
the... Yeah, we are listening.
Yes, actually, we want talking about the slogan of the HLNC. They say that the unity in diversity, nature resources, beneficials, and the youth empowerment for the sustainable development.
Yeah.
I would like to ask you, the whole the project which is led by the government,
yeah.
Who's supervising this national youth project in that aspect? My friend, let me tell you, this is kind of like a form of a political statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we go forward. Unless it's the national project of this national project of youth should be under supervised by the National Intelligence Service under the Office of President and the National Planning Commission. It's where I can see that the things can go efficient and in accordance and transparent. Because I can, I'm arresting. 1990, there was a project which was the BBC. Where's those projects? After all, this is an exemplary of the projects which have been tabled to go the same white elephant like other projects was being formulated. And you can see sometimes of this project, which have been for the youth, have been delayed.
Yeah.
Because of what? There's no rigor aspect on tabled according to the operations. And that is kind of what is irritating. I'm really very much serious with the national buildings and unemployment, poverty eradication. We are sick and tired. We're going to expose. Really, Comrade President, if he's very much serious for this, he must really make sure that all the youth projects must be under supervised by the National Intelligence Services under the Office of the President, National and the National Planning Commission. Why I say that? There's a corruption. There is corruption. Maladministration going on. I'm telling you. I can tell you where it's flying is where it's landed. I can tell you about that. I am very much stressful about this. I think maybe it's just kind of like a imitating of Traore, Burkina Faso or whatever. No, let's be making Namibia a brave, a land of the brave as it's been in the national assembly. And let's be having a moment of silence of the people who are sacrificing for this country.
Yeah.
And even this, our the people that are just gambling us with the politicals that we can see. We want all the national project of the youth to be under supervised by the National Intelligence and as well by the Office of the President, as the President also was capturing and capturing the oil distribution with NAMCO, which was been in whatever. They must do something like that so that we can make sure that the development is in place and everything, corruption, malpractice, and maladministration or whatever. How could you come? You'll be given an incentive project and you're finding the tools and if tools, equipment are missing. They're not to be founded. And it's less on accounted. I want to say that I will be transparent to both the national project of national building and poverty eradication. Yeah, man, we are sick and tired about this, man. We are very much sick and tired about this. Yes, president must be very much serious and supervising all the national youth projects. Yeah. So to be under and monitored by National Intelligence Service. National Intelligence Service must not answer the hostility, insurgency, or whatever. Also, that's who are supporting the mission and the plan of the government. No, man, really. This is, Madam President, sometimes I don't know whether did he visiting and also he can, what kind of the project and how the administrator that project and whatever. Youth empowerment, just on the mouth, youth empowerment. Go in the grassroots level and checking how they are implementing. It's shameful. Shameful.
Okay. Let me ask this. Where are you calling from and who are we talking to?
So far, if it's possible, I'm a regular caller, and at least I'm calling within the Otsozolupa region. And actually to that, I will be also called to the next time, in the same time, yes, actually.
And, okay, let's go with the nickname Anonymous for now, for you. Now, what's wrong with calling ACC if there is a serious concern of corruption?
Let me tell you, we are having professionally engaging sometimes. We are having sabotage. You see, we are having sabotage of something. Sometimes.
Okay, that was not my side, dear caller, just letting you know. But you have the opportunity, you can call back. It seems like it was a core concern specifically for youth development and youth interventions. I'll actually dissect that particular point. First and foremost, why should the president get involved in every nitty-gritty discussion? Do you want to be famous again, Helmut? Yeah, let's do that.
Why should the president get involved? I mean, that's a good question. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
If we have to, I think this is part of the biggest problem. If you have to transfer, let's just say every, all other SOEs or ministries have questionable ways of, of regulating or implementing things, and everything, is going way better in comparison to other ministries or SOEs, for example.
Yeah.
And then we just give all the mandate to all the mandate to the president.
Yeah.
Or more like to the presidency, like the office. That is going to cause power concentration, which is a terrible idea if you end up with the wrong person in office.
Definitely.
Yeah, because that will first have to start with you drafting legislations that will give that mandate, that will shift that mandate from whatever SOE or whatever ministry that has that mandate to the president's office or to the presidency. But the thing is, if you find yourself with a power hungry person in office and they're just abusing that power, taking it away will mean redrafting all the legislations to take away that mandate and bring it back or shift it to wherever it is you want to take. And that's going to take forever. And if there's one thing that we have seen, just looking at the number of bills that have been in bill format and have not ascended to, to acts, I don't think I would want to be behind that.
Yes. So to our caller, this is our summary specifically. If there is a suspicion.
What I'm just saying is that we're talking about concentration of power in one office. And I think that's why we have the separation of power.
Yes.
Is to make sure that we don't have concentration of power, because we learned a very long time ago that concentration of power, irrespective of who has it, is a terrible idea.
It's bad news. Well, second on top of that, to reinforce the point that you're making, Helmut, is specifically the, it's known as division of labor. And you even see it in the public administration realm. Division of labor being, we know And let's take an example of this regional address by Governor Ipinge, specifically for Oshana.
Yeah.
The governors are appointed by the president.
Yeah.
And now we've already dissected this particular discussion as well. Specifically, it creates this sort of like contradictory system, meaning you as the Namibian, you vote for those local councillors in your region, yeah, in your local authorities, and the president appoints someone that you did not vote for, who you don't know. In some cases,
yeah,
you might know them personally in some, but you don't know them in others, which technically defeats the exercise specifically of your voice technically manifesting in the developments you want to see,
yeah,
manifesting in your region, constituency, neighborhood, town, city, you name it. But there is a key thing as well. What permeates through each of the levels that I just now highlighted is a notion that you find in industrial psychology, most probably, or in the philosophy about labor division and the developments of the industrial revolutions in human history, has been division of labor, the concept of division of labor.
Yeah.
Helmut, I can't expect you, for example, to stand for 5 hours recording, let's use the governor again, mm-hmm, recording Governor Ipinge for 5 hours. You're standing there recording him.
Yeah.
Then you have to come back to a studio and then present. But you were standing for 5 hours there. Mm-hmm. You were standing. You were not sitting. You were standing.
Recording everything. And then you break it down.
Then you have to come and edit everything.
Yeah.
Package everything. Do the voiceovers. Mm-hmm. Write the script, which probably will be another 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
In terms of that production, that input. And then present.
Yeah, that's
in broadcast media specifically. You have the guy capturing,
yeah,
who brings back or transmits the content. You've got the guys at the studio, which is a team basically,
yeah,
who then compiles a script. It does the editing, does the voice overing, meaning they, you know, voicing over the particular footage, and then packages everything together in a nice complete little product. And then they then share that with the team that then has to broadcast the product.
Yeah.
Division of labor is key because division of labor not just adds value, but division of labor also incorporates a lot more people.
Yeah.
And you can see the same concept specifically permeating through in politics as well. That's why you appoint ministers. That's why you appoint deputy ministers. That's why you appoint governors. So that these people technically are the functions of the president. Is sort of like permeated through, or you see the empowerment going through these particular appointees. Yeah. People you didn't vote for, but nonetheless they're appointed by under acts and laws of Namibia.
Yeah.
We have to understand this as well, guys. The moment you understand things, you don't have to cry wolf. Not that I'm saying the caller cried wolf, but you also have to understand if you feel aggrieved, there's the ACC. There's the Namibian police.
So, understand the chain of command?
Yes.
Through for everything?
Yes. There's your governor's office even.
I think the division of labor is one good example. Because if you look at it, the division of labor does not only apply to the implementation. But it also does apply to implementation. But the type of implementation I would like to bring up is every, you know, act of parliament that gives a minister or the head of an SOE certain powers, especially, legislative or administrative, but mostly, you know, legislative power where they are allowed take, for example, you know, subordinate legislations or bylaws.
Mm.
Now, if you take that responsibility away, which is sort of like scattered all through to all different, you know, heads of SOEs and different ministries, if you have to bring, you know, if you have to get rid of that, you will ever have to bring everything to parliament, which means every time that, NAMRA or Transnami, for example, runs into a jam with regards to what they would like to implement, because of some unforeseen circumstances, you'll have to keep coming back to parliament for them to decide how to move forward.
Oh man, so, that's such a bogged down process.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why it's broken down to, you know what, Mr. Minister, in the event of any gem, You don't
have. You to, have the powers.
You have the power to to do what you'd otherwise run to parliament with.
Yeah. Then you've got executive directors.
Yeah.
Under those executive directors, there are directors with their directorates. You guys do your thing.
Yeah. Because the goal is to move forward. And one of
and
the,
not to be an impediment.
And it's very easy to be an impediment. And one excellent, clear example is our Public Procurement Act. Mm. That's exactly why we are, it's the reason why we are sort of like amending it. Because we've realized that we have pushed some legislative line to straight up. We are being too, we are playing it a little too safe.
Or we are imagining we are here,
yeah,
but we are still developing.
Yeah, so from the look of things, they are, just think of it like buying a car.
Mm.
You know, no, there's not a single car that has all 100% of the features. There are trade-offs.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are trade-offs to everything.
Yeah.
And the legislation basically just running a country is not an exception.
Yeah.
But back to Oshana, because we are just, taking up,
it actually features into this discussion now because it's what the counselor that made the slight slip of the tongue about computers versus television sets.
Yeah, and those
but the way he says it is like no.
That's what the governor and I laughed. But the difference is he laughed professionally because I was in my room. I was just cracking.
I mean, when he said, no, this is not right. Yes, television sets.
Television sets.
Yeah.
On social media, and I was like, social media is on computers, dude. It's most likely going to be on computers, but, keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the important thing that we see there is primarily also how we've set up our system in Namibia.
Yeah.
Our system, yes, a governor has this unique role in terms of announcing developments, announcing things, indicating new developments that are planned. But let's slightly also step back a little bit. I'm comparing Comas to the other regions.
Yeah.
Because Comas sits with the head offices of these ministries.
Yeah.
Which is Comas' advantage. All these other ministries sit with extension offices or regional offices within their regional authority makeup, which has a little bit of a tricky situation, Helmut, because in the Comas versus the rest of the country's breakdown, the governor knows, firstly, city of Windhoek takes care of most things development-wise, maintenance-wise, as well as also on specific interventions like disasters. How to respond to a disaster and what to do in the case of a disaster. When it comes to the head offices, they know they just have to focus basically outside of the Comas region on these developments. I'll zone in on this once again. City of Windhoek, guys, speaks directly to NamWater, NamPower, and ECB. ECB and NamPower technically together around electricity. City of Windhoek speaks directly to these SOEs. In these other regions specifically, you need to have like a special coordination through the governor or through the regional council to these entities. Okay. If you have a electricity distributor, which is, let's say, the Norits, the Senorits, the Rongorits, then obviously your local authority speaks to that agency. But then you've got a NamWater. Then your local authority also speaks to that agency. But in some cases, it's also through a scenario of working through the governor's office.
Yeah.
And then you've got the extension offices of the ministries present in your region. The concern from this is there is a massive web of communication that has to take place between all these public entities versus we know in Windhoek, in Comas, we're technically lazy in Comas. In Comas, we know City of Windhoek does everything. But before that, we've got a short ad break. We'll come back right after this.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
We come back, dear listeners, there from the quick break right there. You're here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. You are currently listening to The Home Run with myself, Dwight, what Helmut always says, with yours truly, Dwight and Helmut, here on this particular segment. And you are in our drive time. This is your drive time period, specifically between 4 and 7. So as where I left off primarily just before the break was chain of communication. I don't want to say chain of command, chain of communication in terms of responding to needs, responding to services, responding to developments, responding to disasters, responding to needs is a lot shorter. And that's the reason specifically why in the commas scenario, we're slightly spoiled. And why I also said we're slightly lazy laissez-faire, laid back, primarily because we've got this metropolitan entity known as City of Windhoek that responds to these needs. Identify facts for facts. They respond to these needs. When you go into most of the rest of Namibia, you literally have to approach everything in Namibia, outside of commas, with a developmental approach and a mindset and a view and a lens and a perspective, because you then have to look at coordination across the board from a governor's office to the regional council to a local council to a local authority council to a extension office of a ministry to an SOE to another SOE speaking to this SOE, negotiating with that SOE and negotiating then with the local authority. All these things are a massive, it's not a convolution. It's not, because it's a massive communication system of public service delivery to you, the ordinary Namibian, and also to private sector as well.
Well, technically it becomes convoluted.
It technically does, yeah. Helmut, because the reason why I started off with a town planning discussion.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking on Dangwa. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not knocking you, but I've been there. Many Namibians that have seen you will also have the same idea. It's the same thing. Even if you take Grootfontein, for the example. Grootfontein technically is just another kind of a representation of what Ondangwa looks like. You know, there's a massive highway that runs through it. But if you don't explore Grootfontein or you don't stop in Grootfontein, you'll think that's just what Grootfontein is. But if you turn off in Grootfontein,
yeah,
you know, one of those side roads from the highway that, yeah, runs through the town,
yeah,
then you see how beautiful the town is. I was shocked, Helmut. Back in 2016, because it has been a long time between 2016. Let me be honest. As a tourist, as a local Namibian tourist, you know, there's not really much for me as a tourist in the rest of the country, past even up to Otjiwarongo.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you. There's not really much of a, you know, an appetizer.
For me, there is a lot. It's just that every time I look at the prices, I'm like, you see, this is a white people price. You know, like this.
What are you talking about?
Like the
venues.
The price for much of the tourist, you know, facilities.
No, I'm not talking about that, Helmut. I'm talking about the town.
What to go and see?
Yes. What does the town have? What does the town? Exactly. That is my reaction. Exactly. Okay, except for if it's Tsumeb. Except for if it's Tsumeb. Tsumeb is, you know, if there was a town voting mechanism in terms of beauty.
Tsumeb,
I would put Tsumeb down anytime. Anytime.
I haven't visited a lot of them, so I think I still have to, you know, just explore before I start, you know, coming here and then start, you know, cooking every single one of them depending on what I'm going to see.
Why are you being diplomatic?
Look, the thing about being a person that's sarcastic by genetic predisposition is look, it's not my fault.
Genetic predisposition. What is that, genetic predisposition?
It runs in the family.
I thought sarcasm was something you had to train and, you know, harness.
No, it's not kung fu.
Finding your inner chi. Finding your inner chi.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that. This is something different.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. This coming back from that, I know, you know, I still want to explore a lot of corners of my country. I feel like I haven't seen enough, especially further south.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let's come back to, some of the things that I found fascinating from the, you know, from Governor of Nipinge's State of the Region address.
Mm.
So, in agriculture, for example, one of the things he pointed out was Agribank dispensed approximately $2.8 million, that's in Namibian dollars, for northern regions, which benefited the region too, which was like, okay, and that's one of those things that he just glossed through instead of, of going into detail, like how that beneficiation was done, like how much was allocated and, to which institutions and how is the progress of those institutions. And for you and I that have been through, parliamentary standing committee reports on this, we know just how cumbersome that can be.
Yeah.
And we know that it takes a parliamentary standing committee, a very long time to visit this, to go on a sightseeing mission, or as they like to call it, a fact finding mission, to compile all this information to the wonderful reports that you and I like to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
They are lovely.
They are lovely.
Yeah.
They are lovely. So it just glossed through that one, and also said, glossed through what I still maintain to this day, that it was just a shout out to the Office of the Ombudsman for giving Namibians that environment to go and express their right without, the Eagle FM way, without the, without fear or favor.
The Eagle FM way.
The Eagle FM way. Without fear or favor. So,
technically, we're not afraid.
No.
Even our listeners are not afraid.
And then he shifts, to employment now. Oh boy, that is, okay. This is gonna take a while.
Yeah.
Now, so, infrastructure development and public investment. A total of 120 permanent jobs and 1,681 temporary jobs were created across the region through various projects for that 2025-2026 financial. It's about to get even better. Now,
let's switch over to you. I don't want the listeners seeing my disappointed face.
Anyway, so next up, so the next point is looking now. I wanted to listen to the number here.
Yeah.
A total of 120 permanent jobs. Just keep that number in mind because it's about to come up again.
Yeah, 120 permanent.
A total of 120 permanent jobs and 1,681 temporary jobs were created across the whole region. Oshakati Town Council created 120 permanent jobs and 382.
I'm sorry, Governor, that's not an achievement.
Look, it is an achievement.
So no, it's not.
Across the region, 120 permanent jobs were created and 1,681 temporary jobs. Next point, Oshakati created 120 permanent jobs. I was like, oh, Governor, come on.
So technically, he doesn't know what private sector is employing.
I think that's where that's where I just went all. I was like, okay, I'm super confused here. So, now Oshakati Town Council created 120 permanent jobs and 382 temporary jobs.
Yeah.
Ondangwa, Ongwediva, and the Oshana Regional Council created hundreds of temporary employment opportunities, infrastructure development, rural sanitation programs, and community projects. It's very public sector based, which points to information lacking, from my point of view here, out of the private sector. And I know it's a state of the region address, but the private sector is part of the region.
It comes back to
that. Now, that was my face about 2-3 hours ago.
Yeah, I also partially while recording, you know, listened to some of the takes. The confusion, Helmut, that emanates from such data.
Yeah.
Is confusion that I would, and this is where I'm placing the actual blame.
Mm-hmm.
How Namibia is not taking the NSA serious.
Yeah.
NSA, I'm going to send you an invoice, né? Just know this, if you're listening. The NSA has to be elevated to the level of a ministry. Like Stats South Africa.
Yeah.
Stats South Africa is a ministry. The NSA needs to be elevated to the level of a ministry. So that the NSA can tell, for example, regional councils, you will have a division that emulates the NSA's mandate in collecting all data in your region.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't be announcing half or incomplete data sets to everybody.
Now, that is why I think, you know what you said about local regional elections,
yeah,
for local authority elections.
Yeah, that should come before presidential.
Yeah, that should come before
presidential. So that we know who is pitching what to who.
Yeah, plus, your local authorities are more in, they are on the ground in relations to, in relations to what's going on in different constituencies,
exactly,
in different regions, more than central government sitting in the state house.
Yes.
And, now that is why I think, state of the region address is, should come second from state of the region, state of the nation address should come second from state of the region address.
Yeah.
Now, because a state of the region address
should actually feed state of the nation address. Not state of the nation address first happening and then state of the region, but you know what? We put it in an act. The president has to announce things. So now the president goes and reports what her ministries had given her as information sets of the previous year. And then when you get to what you just announced, that a governor says 120 jobs were created, permanent jobs were created. A local authority created 120 permanent jobs. What are you announcing? Where's the private sector?
Short answer, I would guess, is we don't know. And that brings us to us, basically, as a country, not taking NSA serious.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of information blackout with regards to us getting a complete picture of what's happening.
Yeah.
Hence, I think, I think it's okay for the state of the nation address to gloss through information. But state of the region address, I believe, should be given enough time in terms of planning, information gathering, and delivering all this information.
Mm.
I think, and this is just me, and mind you, just a disclaimer here, I don't know a thing about governors.
Mm.
Nowhere near the president or the governor. But I think, take the security information, for example.
Helmut, do you know that governance is easy?
Hmm?
It's actually easy.
All you just have to do is...
just get data. You just tell your departments. You know what to do? Submit data reports every Friday.
And then the data report doesn't show up. Now you have to rely on trust.
And then you start using the law.
Now, here's the thing.
These local authority guys have to start realizing, I will call ACC. Spielman, man. Like Pialo.
Now, you see, the reason why I think, this state of the region address must be given enough time is, take my own region, Kavango East, for example.
Yeah.
More information about what's taking place in the region should come from the governor or constituency councillors, not the president.
Yes.
Because I don't remember when last was the president in my region, if she's even, even been there. Now, the thing is, constituency councillors.
It might have been sort of this year.
Yeah. Now, you see, constituency councillors and governors, the reason why I'm saying they should be given enough time to, you know, to provide this information is take the security, you know, the security component, for example, and the statistics of what's taking place in terms of, you know, of a crime reduction or what type of crimes that are prevalent in the region.
Yeah,
and what the region is doing in terms of combating all the, you know, all these type of crimes, and what the challenges that the security clusters take your NDF, if you have a commerce region, take for example your intelligence, which those guys barely pitch in because of national security, and but just think your police here. Just think your police here. Mm. What challenges are they going through? What type of crimes that they are facing on a daily? That like you need someone from the security cluster to come and provide that information.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's kind of difficult to pull off in the day. What type of investment is taking place in the education sector?
Yeah.
What type of investment and challenges are taking place in the health sector?
Yeah.
And this is all regional. Now, I think breaking it down that way is going to take long, that I'm aware of, and it's most likely to cost even more. I think that's one of the reasons why we're just providing a glossed through information. Even if I was governor and you only gave me 30 minutes to an hour to break down what's taking place in multiple ministries and different SOEs in my region, that's borderline impossible.
Yes, it is. And it's a scenario also of taking a deep dive. What's the actual impact?
Now, yes, okay. Crime declined.
Yes.
Why?
Yes, please explain why.
What are we doing that made it decline? So we can invest in it more.
Yes.
So we can see even more declining.
Yes.
Like, at least that's what I was expecting. But, and now, I'm not saying I expected that to come from the governor because, well, he's a governor. The information he was presenting in terms of the security, that's, much of that information, I expect that to come from the Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security.
The regional commander was sitting right there in front of him, Elmer.
That is why I'm saying, can we just bring this guy? Like,
let every representative stand up.
Yeah, like,
and
look,
present.
Like, look, as a governor,
just
moderate. Okay,
yeah.
Now Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security.
Please.
Safety and Security Directory.
Regional Commander, please step up.
What's happening in our region with regards to your directory?
Yeah, come.
Then he explains. And now, health. Now, who do we have here?
Yeah.
Who do we have representing the health sector? Health public sector. Who do we have representing the private sector in our region?
Yeah.
Please break this down for us.
Yes. And kindly provide some statistics, comparisons, XYZ, new developments. There you go. He's clear. Next guy.
Next, please.
Yes. Next, education, please. Step
next,
forward.
Please. And then the governor just, say, well, thank you all and thank you for all this development and have a good one. Goodbye.
Could have been a Zoom call, Hamut.
It could have been an email. Now,
could have been an email.
No. And you see, the emphasis on private sector type of investment just, being emphasized, it just goes deeper than that. Because the governor goes on to say that education infrastructure projects created additional 122 jobs. It's also pointing more in the direction of the public sector, of what's in investments taking place in the public sector.
Yeah.
Again, it leaves a lot, a very wide gap of a very giant question mark of, okay, what's happening in the private sector?
Yeah.
And then you have the last one now. Oshakati Premier Electric, which is an SOE, created 306 temporary jobs through electrification-related projects. And I keep asking the same question over and over again. We just had a public-private partnership.
I want to ask the question of, why are we mentioning temporary jobs?
Yeah.
Temporary jobs sound to me like an account in my accounting wiring in my brain that I last had back in 2010.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like petty cash expenditure.
Yeah.
It's from the petty cash book.
It definitely is.
It's not from the general ledger, from the cash book analysis, and even from the T account analysis. It's petty cash. It's a miscellaneous expense. It's not an actual targeted, long-standing, long-term impact. It's short-term.
It's instant.
That's the that's why the word temporary even sounds worse than short-term. Temporary employment.
Mm-hmm.
Do people, how much, remember, I have this thing also where I ask the question of, for example, like today, the mining expo began yesterday. The mining expo. And we obviously now have this great emphasis. We've been having this great emphasis, even like here on Eagle FM. We've been having this great emphasis, which technically looks like we are cheerleading the mining sector. But every time when you throw a fact down, like it employs the least of Namibians, it needs the most skilled of Namibians. Its contribution technically is just in a data set, or if you look at it GDP-wise, that's it. We need to do more in terms of making the economy work for Namibians. Basically, and this is the disconnect, the president knows this, because the president's three speeches back in last year at the NDP6, at her inauguration on 21 March last year, and there was a third one where she mentioned basically the same sentence. The president's speech basically says, we are too few to be poor. That should tell you, transform your economy so that it is societally focused. It is focused on the Namibians. Stop focusing on the sector. Focus on the Namibian.
Yeah.
What does the Namibian need? Not what the sector needs. That is our disconnect, Amon. So, the Governor Ipinge, started on a good point. Obviously, you know, the crime and some of the particular key developments and the service provisions, which sounded obviously societally. But when you come and announce to me temporary jobs,
mm-hmm.
what is this? What's a good thing?
Well, I understand there's been a decline in Turabo activities, and I mean, that's a good thing. But my fear is because of centralization. Look, if governance is centralized...
they don't have a Tura.
Turabo activities are also going to be centralized.
You say it's a universal activity?
Yeah, so, because if you have rural to urban migration, there's going to be a Karacha to Tura migration. That's a location in Divundu. There's going to be...
Divundu is a location?
Well, there are different locations. That you,
how big is Divundu, Hamut? Population size.
Wow, population size.
And if you can describe it to me, like in terms of from which neighborhood Yen Vantuk to which neighborhood.
Population size, let me see if I can count. It's me, my uncle, two of my friends.
No. Oh, no.
Busy counting here.
Yeah, Amuri's busy counting. Guys, you should see Amuri's busy counting his family. Okay, some of you are seeing him basically counting.
The cameras and okay, change your plan.
Yeah, you've been famous the whole time. You've been famous the whole time. So yeah, I'm sorry to the friends of Helmut that he just heard your names. I'm sorry, guys. That was not the intended purpose. I was looking for like
Look,
just a rough estimate.
Yeah, look, it's a good thing you brought up the mining part, because oh man, that's the next part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go into the next part. Or do you want us to first answer this phone call?
Answer the phone call, please.
Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
The Uncle Bwana, how you doing, Uncle Bwana?
Fine, thank you. How are you two doing, people there?
Well, we're doing very well. We are coasting.
Are you celebrating the achievements and the legacy of the late Dr. Hage Geingob, let him rest in peace?
We didn't have that opportunity, Uncle Bwana, to be honest.
Mm. We were reminded by the month, I mean, August is not a month, it's a year. It's a very important year.
Oh, but I may have been listening and hearing people celebrating, especially based on the legal tendencies and you, those who have actually appreciated our democracy and our constitution, actually.
Yeah.
That is now founded on the true democratic principles.
Yep.
And they see that the rule of law and justice for all at least has come.
Mm-hmm.
And these are actually, I was really expecting you guys to really hammer also on this one, so that our young ones and the people who are not able to see and visualize the opportunity,
you see, they are not really enlightened into issues of our democracy. And I understand many a times, especially last time, 2 days ago or so, or last week, you know, you guys, you have adopted what is this system of education that was there?
Yes, Angupana.
And you have actually, that the one that describes a teacher knows all. But I love the comedian, the way you interact. But I just feel that it's also good to hear from some nonsense from us or opinions.
Angupana, it's not nonsense, Angupana. It's not nonsense.
Just to interact, you know.
It's not nonsense, Angupana.
I know. Many a times I have a notebook and also the cabeza to recall what you have started from four. Sometimes it's only at the end of the time when I get lost, I forget about all the lessons. And I don't know, maybe it has been like that. I know it has been like that. But I just thought maybe the reconstruction of our nation, you know, through some of those aspects, especially when it comes to the arms of government.
Mm.
I mean, state, where you really see. And I know Helmut, most of the time we come to US, that time was talking about the indigenous minority people and all these things. I don't know whether he was also mentioning about indigenous rights. And of course, we really have those issues going on there. Some of these languages and culture that we had, that were existing in the world, they are actually disappearing.
They are?
Yeah.
They are disappearing, and those people, they become minority. And if their identities and those their cultures and all these things are not protected and also restored through the law, so then they disappear. Even here, we also find some people who are minority.
Yes.
In many, many spheres of the government, which was in the ideal of those who have crafted up the constitution, which is, of course, need to be, you know, the living document, be amended there where there's some crashes of this arms. So you can always change it, amend it, because maybe those were not actually known during the time when it came into existence. And now the lot of issues are coming out. So we expect you guys to give us those areas so that we can also learn and try to apply our mind, and when we are interpreting, this judicial interpretation can also be not really out of, you know, out of context or line. So it might contradict those values, which we do not want, but we want our seniors, Helmut and others, yourself, who have come first, man, to have known these things and give us more. So anyway, I am just concerned with this Bantu education system that you are actually adopting. And it's a good thing, because you talk, off you go, it's good. But what about the learner? Teacher learner standard education, is he no longer there? Because he really tried by all means to ensure that that banning system, the depository kind of a system of knowledge, is at least, we know, it
should be done away with. We should do away with it.
Yeah, man, maybe it's because it has got some kind of apartheid, you know, Helens, issues of that nature, I don't know how we call it. So it is sometimes painful, man, you know. So it is very exclusive. And you're not even able to get a feedback whether we have learned something or a learner there has learned something. And I'm sure if it started a long time ago, so you people, you could have boycotted at those nasty and the UNAM there and say, oh, teacher just came, or professor, or whoever, come and talk, off he goes.
Mm.
Off he goes. So you could have demonstrated. The open door policy that Dr. Hagel Denkop is a legacy. So hence you have all those open platforms to talk and all these other things. Mm. Let's regulate some of this legacy and let's not allow them to die off, because our future might not even know. So it's a platform, it's a good one, and we appreciate that one. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Not a problem, Angabona.
Helmut, in the spirit of celebrating this week, my sarcasm, don't worry, has been stored away.
Mm-hmm.
You can.
In the celebrating as in the president, the, you know, our late president celebration.
Whichever, I'm in both.
You're in both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me be honest. Yeah. It's a good thing Angabona cited that particular example. Angabona, I'm sorry, but I also actually wanted you to call back in last week. I was hoping I referenced you in a specific talk. We won't blame anyone. Don't worry. But it's a good thing that he's bringing up, Helmut, because it also plays a particular role in how we build societies going ahead, and specifically looking at what the state of the region addresses wish to achieve.
Yeah.
They wish to inform. They wish to provide data. They wish to provide evidence. They wish to provide feedback to residents, a population, a community in a specific setting. But at the heart of this, there is a funny thing here, primarily, which still has not been solved from President Geinkop's era or time frame into even now 2026 where we sit. Which has been the discussion that I ended off on, that you also cited specifically. Data, informed decision making, based upon information gathering that is sound, that is reliable, and that helps basically the public sector respond adequately. Because
information, but
because to help with governance, What did Graham Hopwood from IPPR continue? Every time he says, when I go to an EITI discussion that the IPPR presents, he keeps emphasizing that it was President Geinkop's suggestion, the EITI.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that the civil society came up with. It's President Geinkop who cited it in
Reserve Open Contracting.
Yeah, in Harambe Prosperity Plan 2. And they motivate why EITI would form a backbone in transparency in reinforcing good governance,
yeah,
and all these particular aspects, because it will help with closing some of the gaps. And that's where I saw back in 2023, the first time that they spoke about EITI, and then I heard about this concept. Remember, then you went and spoke about open contracting later that day, mm-hmm, on the home run, and I was on the business and economic segment. Mm-hmm. And we basically sat, or I sat there with a realization. But this is to fill the gaps of where there currently are gaps in our lawmaking.
Yeah.
So if you want to appease, for example, local political actors, local communities who see a mining company, which is, let's say, the UIS, lithium mining discussion, the community doesn't have information or no one communicated anything with them.
Yeah.
Things are just happening in their community. They have nowhere, no one knows what's going on. They just see things happening. No one wants to talk to them, inform them. But the EITI would then help to provide and fill in those gaps on ESG, would fill in those gaps on public participation, would fill in the gaps of quantities extracted versus those how much of those quantities were sold in an international marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that company that is selling and extracting, their reporting in terms of what happens to every stage of moving the mineral from X to Y, all that.
Yeah, and then it's also help NAMRA a lot.
Yeah, and it would help NAMRA and Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Mines and Energy. It would help all the related entities basically have up-to-date information. Although I would not trust Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy with their trust me bro analysis that comes through from the Auditor General's office, because the Auditor General's office literally highlighted to us, we technically have public servants who don't want to work
Look, what the president, the late president Gengob suggested with regards to the to EIDI. You can actually see why that would be a good thing, because take the Fisheries Observer Observer Fund report, again coming out of the Office of the Auditor General. One thing that it indicated is that we are terrible at gathering information and compiling it to make a complete picture of what's going on, especially in the public sector, which now makes it very difficult for anyone, if you know, to sort of like clarify questions or that is in relations to corruption allegations.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to clarify those questions with half-baked information.
Yeah.
But now the EITI, for example, would help basically be a spotlight on a lot of you know, on a lot of activities taking place, especially in the public sector.
Mm.
Now the public sector is not doing everything on its own. Obviously, it's working on a lot of levels and in tandem with the private sector. Like your take, for example, like your employment creation in infrastructure being built from the ground up, or expanding existing infrastructure in the public sector. Of course, you have a lot of private sector participation in that, and that's where you are getting all this employment creation. But the thing is, the construction is obviously going to have a lot of temporary employment, like the Oceano governor puts it.
Mm.
Because, you know, you are not going to build, you are not going to construct things in perpetuity.
How about election officials are also temporary employment?
Yeah. Once every 5 years. Now, what happens in between the two elections? May the Lord be with you.
NSA enumerators are also temporary employment. That's why I'm asking, what must I do with such information? If people were paid 7 months ago in that direction, in that financial year, and
they temporarily made the category of employed, and then when the project came to an end, and they're back to being unemployed.
Yes.
Until
that's why I'm showing you. That's why I'm showing you the severity of such a reporting.
Yeah.
Because this is someone that was not employed. Is employed for a short stint and is now unemployed. This is not a person who is an engineer, who is a scientist working from project to project that you can say temporary employment in that project, temporary employment in that project, temporary employment in that project. No. This is someone that just finished grade 12, who might be a first year university student, who might be a young person, a youth. Like we heard from the previous caller before, Angabona, who cited direct impact to help the youth do something.
Yeah.
Also holding back my sarcasm, my first immediate response would have been, so what's going on in that region? What's the community doing? In some cases, the community has to pull themselves together to do things for themselves. That's why you start from the individual to the family, then the community. If your family doesn't help you, Helmut, achieve goals, I don't know what's going on. Then I don't know at what level do we have a broken society? I really don't know, Helmut. If I'm a Windhoeker sitting in Windhoek, and I can see all around me, there are households helping each other. Helmut, have you ever done this exercise, for example? Have you ever looked at, for example, you and your siblings, and you look at a current financial state, let's say, of your household?
Yeah.
You've got your parents at the top, you and the siblings. And let's say one of your parents is the only breadwinner up until one of you graduate university and then get a job.
Yeah.
You're one of the siblings, one of the children. And you're still living with your parents. Have you seen how exponentially what more money does in an equation for a household? Versus if it was just the responsibility of one person in that household, in that family setting, just earning all the money. Have you seen what that expansion exponentially does? You can suddenly buy mobile phones because of the second person's salary, even if it's just a child of these two parents. In some cases, I've seen scenarios where the children take over certain costs, certain major costs that the parents were carrying for so long. These interventions are life-changing. Life-changing.
On a community level.
No, household, not community.
No, on a household level.
Then you see, then you have to look for, how many times does this replicate in the community? And it is mind-boggling. It is literally the most beautiful experiment that you'll ever see. And it's a human thing. It's nothing to do with a mining company. Nothing to do with rubbish statistics. Nothing to do with reporting for the sake of reporting because there's an act that says I must report. No. It is a beautiful scenario. But, as we do know, more money sometimes leads to vices developing.
Oh, yeah.
Because potentially what the governor also cited is potentially some of these, those that were causing crime might probably have been part of the people finding temporary employment.
Well.
And that is my assumption because, like you said, and what we saw in the video, there was no explanation as to why this reduction happened.
Mm-hmm.
Why did these reductions happen?
There was a decline. Thank you very much. That's a good thing.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you for not beating each other up.
Yeah.
Robbing each other.
Shout out to... Okay, go on.
No. You would have said the shout out. Let's hear the shout out. Shout out to who, Helmut?
To the boys for stealing less.
Allah, Helmut. Okay. Let's assume...
And up next on the... up next is something that I will just, not interested much in, but I'll just go through it and then we'll go to what I'm interested in because that has a tourist-ish aspect to it in terms of the events that are organized in the region to that basically, brings people into the region which is a good for the economy of the region.
Mm.
Ministry of Mines was also given a shout out for supporting entrepreneurs through business training, agro processing programs, and equipment assistance schemes, and pointed out something. Used the words that low key hints into yesterday's discussion. The Ministry of Mines supported entrepreneurs through business training and agro processing programs and equipment assistance schemes, and the first number shows up with 1,329 businesses were registered with 1,329 businesses were registered with BIPA. That's also the recordings coming out of the, out of the region. And 975 small and medium enterprises certificates were issued. When I came to that part, it brought up the point that you keep making that. Do we know how many businesses are being registered and how many businesses are turning to dust as they go into the afterlife? Because of economic issues. Because now, if you have global economic issues that has a strain on big industries in the country, you can only imagine what small businesses are going through.
Mm.
That would provide a lot of insight with what's going on. With what's going on, I think people will come in very handy when it comes to that. But again, we don't see this overall, like national, more like or regional, compiled statistics with regards to registration, or more like
closures.
Yeah. Thank you.
And now, deregistrations.
Then you have equipment aid scheme benefited 15 previously disadvantaged entrepreneurs. I still have no idea what that means. Yeah.
The whole region was previously disadvantaged.
Previously disadvantaged entrepreneurs approximately 866,000 Namibian dollars. And six entrepreneurs benefited from NIPD and Rani Group equipment and support grants, which was like... Okay, that's a good thing.
So it was a corporate social responsibility by the Rani Group.
Yeah.
But before we continue, Helmut, we quickly take a short break.
USAFE's customers love combos, right? Well, for just $589 Namibian, you can get 10 kilogram Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomu Fed Cooked Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just $589 Namibian for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAFE.
And we come back to your listeners there from the quick break. Helmut, just where you left off.
Oh.
Primarily.
Oh, thank you. Now, and it's something awesome again. Now, the Oceana Regional Council, through its procurement, and so let's hang volume on this one. That's what's left of my Setswana language. You know, just increase the. You may want to increase the volume on this one.
You know that the Setswanas, they use an English word and they just say something in front of it.
Say
volume.
Tuletang volume. There's ng tuletang. Like
now, I'm saying it. Sometimes they just use the English word and they just go sella volume. Yeah, here comes David as well.
Our
superstar is also making his entrance.
Yeah, so the Oceana Regional Council, through its annual procurement of approximately $110 million, out of that amount, 15% was reserved for micro enterprises and informal businesses. Yeah, I had that face. But this even a more interesting part.
Wait. No. Okay, first finish that interesting part. First finish that.
Creating local entrepreneurs to participate in government contracts, generate income and expand their operations.
Okay. From what I've seen in the public service sector, it is difficult to procure from the informal industry, Samut, because the government, which is a regional council, and even local authorities, they run on a purchase order system. Do you know what a purchase order system does, Helmut?
Please elaborate.
A purchase order system, Helmut, says, and if you've never seen a purchase order before, whether it be a ministerial purchase order or a local authority and a regional authority purchase order. But the regional authority's purchase order looks similar to what the ministries use.
Mm-hmm.
They both have, it's a purchase order where the person comes to you directly, the procurement department of that entity of government. And you, as the service deliverer, you have to sign on the original copy, the first one, the second copy, and there's a third copy. And then they want an invoice to take with them back to the office for filing to effect payment when you actually supply. Now, a purchase order is technically saying, yes, we acknowledge your quotation, Helmut, that you supplied to us. And yes, we acknowledge that we agree to your price. Because the moment they show up with the purchase order, they agree to your price. Now, here is the coup de grace of my reasoning. Which street vendor or informal sector person do you know sits there producing invoices on the pavement?
I would have a pile of peanuts receipts if that was true.
Did you get a receipt today from the peanut lady?
No.
You didn't? Yeah. I never saw a receipt book with that lady. When I also bought peanuts and bananas, and last week I bought what? Tangerines from her. No, not tangerines, narkis. I bought narkis from her. I never got a receipt. She doesn't give a receipt.
The reason why I had that face is because especially from central government, we keep hearing a lot of questions, especially from civil society, about financial reporting from SOEs and ministries.
Yeah.
And I'm here going, okay, isn't this going to put a gap in the information that's needed for financial reporting that is obviously going to bring up a lot of questions? you know, that's going to bring up a lot of questions with regards to, okay, what's going on? Because every month, you know, every year during a budget, is allocated to, and money is allocated to different ministries and SOEs, and they're required to produce a financial report on that money, like what they spend, and which is a transparency measure and a security measure in terms of to make sure that money is not abused.
Yeah.
But look, it's a very noble thing to incorporate
expenditure,
local small businesses.
Yeah, for micro.
Exactly, yeah. On a micro level. But
if that peanut lady
to have one giant gap.
If that peanut lady has never given you a receipt, Hamut, has never given me a receipt,
yeah.
And I know David bought from her as well, and has never given him a receipt. Well, we're implicating everybody,
yeah,
David.
David maybe got a receipt.
When did you ever get a receipt from? Okay, so where we are currently? So 110 million.
Yeah.
Part of 15% of that 110 million by the Oshana Regional Authority was planned and budgeted for expenditure and procurement from the informal industries and from MSMEs.
Yeah.
Now, an MSME can get this necessary framework in order, having an invoicing system.
Yeah.
But a local authority and a regional authority use a purchase order system. A purchase order system, Helmut, David, currently from 2016 under President Geingob.
Yeah.
And yes, Angopwana, here's a legacy of President Geingob, meaning counting every dollar of expenditure.
Yeah.
Every 3 months, every 6 months, businesses, this exercise still exists, businesses have to resubmit updated company documents. Where in what world have you ever seen an informal industry operator having to resubmit every 6 months updated documents of their enterprise with the relevant? So I'm talking about City of Windhoek with fitness certificates and the other good standing certificate. Social Security with fitness certificate. Oh, no, with a good standing certificate. Ministry of Finance, NAMRA. Then there is, if you're a food vendor, City of Windhoek's food inspectors have to certify you. If you are hospitality or any other major establishment, there's occupational health and safety that you also have to be assessed on, and also for your customers because it's the general public.
Yeah.
So I asked the question, and this is broad. Where have we seen a vendor, a street vendor, sit with an invoice book?
Okay, look, the thing is, this is why I think this takes me back to our, you know, to the beginning of the governor's speech with the crime statistics and all.
Where you were asking the question, how did this happen?
Yeah, there's a lot of glossing through.
Yeah.
You know, like I pointed out earlier, including, you know, micro business institutions on a community level, you know, on a village council level. To participate in, you know, participate in the economy. That's a very noble cause. But the thing is, what I see is a collision between that implementation, if not a financial reporting, which is required by central government, is accounted for. Now, where does the glossing through comes in? Because I'm saying the glossing through comes in because I would expect now the governor to go through, to go into detail, like, okay, with regards to incorporating small businesses on a communal level into the central government, call it financial advantage.
Mm.
We are facing this and these challenges, whether it's financial reporting or just the sheer implementation itself. And this is how we are addressing that, which for me, I'm just looking at the challenges that they are, that they are facing and how they are addressing it. Because I'm sure there are measures in place, but again, I also hope so. Yeah, because what we see here is a gloss through of very delicious information that I would like to know more, but that information is not provided.
Yeah. The why.
Yeah.
Or the how.
Yeah.
Your take, David?
Yeah,
that's why I hammered you with the invoices. Have you ever received an invoice?
No, I did not receive.
Yeah,
but I'm a good supporter of informal sector. I just wanted to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now looking at what the governor has stated, just to start with, looking at the speech and communicating to his people, giving it a general assessment, yeah. I think it's a good thing that he came about, and it's a good thing that his reporting was in order. You can question the statistic later. We can look at the sources later. But looking at the general presentation and also engagement with people, one will be able to see that as long as you have somebody who is young, somebody who came to the office, it's, to me, I think it's a good start.
Okay.
Then we can look at the content later. Because why I'm saying it's a good start, especially in the first state of regional address, when he came to office, believe me, I was doing early morning scoop, and I was very angry. I was personally very angry based on how stakeholders responded. Somebody young is brought to the office, and people did not show up.
To his address?
Yeah, no, at the beginning, when he came to power.
Yeah.
But you can also see, when you look at that numbers, when you look at the face of the people, somewhere, somehow, you can also see that there is public confidence. That, to me, I give him good marks, especially looking at the presentation, looking at engagement with people. But when it comes to data and statistics, it's up to us as researchers to go in and to say, where do we draw this? Like where I found you in the conversation, where do we fill this gap? And me, especially currently, when I have to look at issues of governance and also issue of the nature of leadership, I first have to look at e-governance. I have to go to your website. Is your website up to date? Is your website having all the information? I went there and I checked. Luckily, it's up to date.
The regional authority's website.
The regional authority. Yeah. But when it comes to information such as the SORA, I still have to see it. I'm not getting it. Maybe they're updating it a bit slow in terms of that.
Yeah.
But compared to others, I think it's a good start.
It might be.
Now let's engage with statistics and the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, the issue of numbers and statistics, the truth will always come out. But with crime reporting, I think is something that you can applaud stakeholder cooperation. With the reporting such as from Development Bank of Namibia,
I still want us to have a proper centralized
institution. Yeah. I mean, we already have
on crime, like David now said.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of cooperation. You can get it from the regional commander. They'll be able to give you the statistics within the region. They have. Yeah, they do.
I know they do.
I asked
this question directly 2 years back in 2024 to what's the deputy commissioner Shikwambi, and she told me. Well, she gave me also that reaction. Well,
about that.
We do compile, because I asked her, listen, is there a report that you guys have about as NAMPOL for every year and every month and stuff like that? And she said, well, Dwight, you know, that report, we send that report to cabinet.
Yeah.
So then you understand, okay, it's probably, if those stats came out, it probably would make Namibia look bad.
I hear you.
Yeah. And economic inequality is not making us look bad enough.
And you must also realize that, you know, when you have data and statistics, and you are at the national level, it's good for people to know, but you must also be very, very careful, especially looking at where you are. If you compare with other countries, you start realizing that they are using their statistics not to impress the public.
Anyone, yeah.
But to solve those problems.
Yeah.
If the crimes are going down.
It actually reinforces new policies. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Policies change like this.
Yeah. Yeah, but the conversation must continue based on verification too. I was also looking at the part where you spoke about jobs that were created. I like the structure of the speech. Governance, economic, and also to look at all the pillars that are mandated by the central government.
David, are you happy with temporary jobs?
Come again?
Are you happy with temporary jobs?
Dwight, we are in a survival economic mode. Let me tell you one thing. I just came from... No, I'm not saying I'm happy. I'm not saying I'm happy with it.
Yeah. But
if somebody asks you between having no job and having a temporary job, which one are you going to choose?
I'll take the temporary.
Yeah. And then you answer
because
my question.
Because I've been there.
Yeah. But let me give you something. There is something which is going on social media. Mm. Somebody's carrying a carcass of a baboon, which was bummed in Okahanja. Mm. Maybe somebody watching from America think we are shooting a video in Namibia, or maybe we are coming up with a comedy show. We want likes. But this is,
that will be a very dramatic contribution.
No, somebody looking, somebody looking, maybe think, no, these guys are just making comedy. Yeah. But this is somebody who got an opportunity to say, today is today, my family is going to eat.
Yeah.
But when you are looking at this guy carrying a baboon, to me, as a junior researcher, to me, that is my economic indicator. I don't need to go to the field and ask how many people are hungry, are going home hungry. That is a point of departure when you are doing your research to say, if the random behaviors of people are like this, this is what it is. That's why to say, if somebody created 20 jobs or 100 jobs, one person in Namibia currently, that person must be praised. But temporary job at the regional level, I also have to say, but you see,
1,000 temporary jobs.
You see, it's not, although you can appreciate job creation, it's not corresponding with the numbers of people within the region, and it's not keeping up with the pace. Yeah, that's why, it's an honest reporting, but there is no bigger progress, compared to the previous predecessor. Looking at that number,
120 permanent jobs, versus 200,000 inhabitants. That's not even a 1%, because 1% is 200 people of it's 2,000. 1% is 2,000 of 200,000. That is less than a percent. 120.
Here's why I think this whole thing is
lopsided.
Let's just start with a national level type of discussion in terms of development here. We are talking about, we are not addressing this, we are not addressing
we
this.
Still
that's
have to get to hard up,
no? We're going to be there.
But, and
here's the thing. We are, there's one giant elephant in the room that we are not addressing as a nation. Economic inequality. Do we know what is the cause? Do we know how to address it? Because that's another source of resources that we do not want to talk about, but it would save us a lot of money. But we, it's like every time that we talk about development, let's just talk about, we don't have enough money because of, global economic problems. And, global economic fallout is going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
We don't have the population, economic, or military size to do anything about it. So
we
I think
won't invite anyone else
our
to colonize
focus,
them.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Look, if the president, if the president has money in sofas, that's our thing. We specialize in that. We will execute that mission without damaging a camera. But the thing is,
that economic, is empowering the wrong guys.
Look, the thing is, we are not talking about. Why is no one talking about the fact that we have been on top of economically unequal countries for a very long time?
We still are.
We still are, but no, we don't talk about it like, okay, this is a problem. Whether we like it or not, this is a problem. And it's one of those problems that's contributing to our, sluggish economic development. But we are not willing to talk about that. What I want to understand is why.
It's like I said earlier, before David came in, and just for David's information, it's the focus on the industries versus the focus on society. Building society versus building an industry.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, David, you and Francina, you guys went to the Chamber of to the mining.
Stop reading my mind. I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But I hear you. I'm gonna bring you in on that. If you observed all the other media that were also present there, it was not just Eagle FM's presence there.
But we were there, my brother.
We were there.
Yeah.
That's good. We were there, guys. We were there. The important thing that you sometimes see there is how people hype up their industry.
Yeah.
And then also how the media, which are a conduit to supply information, how we hype up mining as well. Look, I might sound like a communist because my dad worked in mining. we probably are focusing too heavily on the sectors to meet needs, rather than seeing we are sitting with resources in the communities, try to use that resources to meet community needs.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But David, you wanted to add?
Yeah, like looking at the industry itself, it's a very good thing. And it's building on our usual conversation. We speak about infrastructure versus people, economy development in terms of numbers versus how many people you take out of poverty. I just wanted to contribute something regarding the mining expo.
Yeah.
When I look around, I do my own observation. I look at these heavy trucks. I look at these companies.
Oh, the equipment.
The equipment.
And the expo and the exhibitions.
The exhibition. And then I ask myself. I look at the people themselves.
It looks like an industrial museum in many cases.
Yeah. And I look at the people themselves.
I should stop with my imagination.
And when you ask yourself a question to say, these are very serious business people.
Yeah, they are.
They can hear the political communication. But these are the people that they are looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
They are looking at the money. They are looking at deals. Mm. There's no doubt about that.
They look at science or they use science?
Yeah, they use science and they are very rational.
Yeah.
When you look at the players in the industry, the main question that you really ask yourself is that at what point is this individual who is operating in this sector focusing on the national development as we want to get into, and where are they meeting each other? And the president is really trying, especially, I think she has been consistent regarding to say, guys, she did not say, guys, I'm just paraphrasing.
I mean, I would have a good time if she says that.
To say, guys,
she please. Probably thinks
that. Please make sure that people from those areas, they benefit from their resources. And also indicating to say, those with authority.
Uh-huh.
I think at some point she's also talking to the
local
to her soldiers. When I'm talking about a soldier, I mean the cabinet and people with authority. Those with authority, stop negotiating with poverty mentality. It's the same thing that she indicated today, to say use resources as a leverage. Now, to come to your question and also the point of argument is that where are we going to come to the point of measuring human development? Why are we prioritizing industries? Because if you see somebody stand up, and it's something which I am not happy with, when somebody stand up and say, regardless of what is happening around the world is always going to be there. You know that, Dwight?
Yeah.
If you stand up and say, regardless of what's happening around the world, I managed to have 5 chicken in this sector.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's happening, that no, already no, shifting the blame. No, that's already shifting the blame to say, yes, you can do it. It's when you are communicating to say, no, regardless of challenges, there is no way in the past 20 years, if you compare, politicians stand up and say, we don't have challenges. Challenges are always there.
Yeah,
when Singapore has developed, did they not understand that they were operating even very difficult Cold War?
A lot of,
not just that.
But you cannot stand up and say, regardless of whatever happened, people can already see. Just say, this is my game plan. You are a leader. When you are a leader there, if I don't have food, I have to say, no, governor, what are you doing? Even people who are not well informed. But overall is good. But standing up and say, this is a better we can do, it also doubts if you compare with the previous regional administration.
Yeah.
Because if you want to see progress, just take data, take the other state of regional address, compare and also look at the numbers, and also look at this one. Then you see, do you have progress or you don't have progress?
Without playing the political games.
Without playing the political game.
Yeah.
And if you have progress, your good analysis will always come here to say, let's give an example to say the previous one created 90 permanent jobs.
Yeah.
Where the population,
let's say
was below 200,000.
Yeah.
Then this one created 120, where the population is over 200,000, and many other things. Then you can also see that here we have progress, here we don't have progress, here this is what we need to do. But let's just before you come in, let's take.
No, I'm just nodding my head, Dave.
No. Don't take only the regional progress.
Yeah.
Take all SORA, like what you guys are initiated, all SORAs. Then you can do a prediction to say if in 2026, this is our pace.
Yeah.
Let's assume we progress with 5%.
No, but then we need to then we need to know by how much the population grows.
No. I hear you. I hear you. No, but predictions are always there. If in 2026, this is what SORA look like in Oshana. This is what it look like in Ohangwena.
Yeah.
This is what it look like in Karas, and what it look like in Kavango East and West.
Mm.
Where are we going to be in 2027? Let's assume things remain the way they are.
Mm. Oh boy. Okay.
No, in terms of whatever, because there's always this thing to say, you know, regardless of logistic was cut, people are fighting with each other.
You know, the reason why I'm saying oh boy is I'm going back to the point I made earlier, which is the elephant in the room, economic inequality, that we are not addressing.
Mm.
Now, this is where I throw my diplomatic head.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If we are in the middle of development, we are looking forward to our first, oil production. That's what everyone is looking forward to.
This FID thing.
Yeah, in this, if you are at this level we're at this economic level, and you have economic inequality that's so wide, you have people that can barely afford food, and you have people that want iPhones with two SIM cards.
Yeah.
What's gonna happen is when it doesn't matter how much growth you are going to face as a country.
Yeah.
That gap will just keep growing. So the poor will keep getting poorer, and the people with who are asking for iPhones with two SIM cards will be asking for iPhones with four SIM cards.
Yeah.
Because they can afford it.
Or they will own four.
Or they will own four with 100 SIM cards. The point is, this is a conversation that Namibia and South Africa are avoiding like it's a plague.
Yeah.
Because it's that obvious from global statistics.
Yeah.
When it comes to economic inequality, the terrible picture that draws is, the Talibans are better at sharing resources than we are.
There's one thing that
yes, they are.
If we are terrible,
and the worst thing is they commit human rights violations.
Yeah, look, man, if we are terrible at sharing the few, we are going to be tearing.
No, we actually have more than them.
I'm talking about as a country. If we are terrible at sharing the little that we have,
which is a lot in comparison to Afghanistan.
Yeah, you will have a lot of explaining to convince me that once we have a lot, we will then all of a sudden miraculously learn to share.
So it's
sharing the little that's
if we are terrible to share the little now, we will always, even
but
if
the little, even to right now, even is if, a lot for 3 million people.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the president is right, we are too few to be pure, to be poor. So even if we start producing oil, if we are terrible at sharing this,
what we already have,
we are still going to be terrible at sharing that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's just my point of view.
The little that you have, you must also ask to say, who own the little that you have? because that is where we are all going. You know what, Ne? If you look at what we do with the financial sector, just compare what that Arendo said yesterday. I'm not saying we are begging the financial sector in terms of we want it to change. We don't really want to touch it, but we want it to change this way and this way so that we can accommodate everybody.
Yeah.
The same thing that we do to the mining sector.
Mm.
We are still talking from very, very far, because up to now, as we are speaking, there is no clear plan. There is an intention, and you don't like it when I'm saying we have good intention. There is an intention to diversify our economy.
Yeah.
There is an intention for greater shares of Namibians in the mining sector. There's an intention to fill this gap.
Epangelo should have done that already, but
no, there is an intention. The question is that what is being done? Looking at Zimbabwe had an intention and an action.
Mm.
As we are still there. Because looking
so we're in the friend zone.
Yeah, yes, we are still there. We are still talking. We are in a talking zone.
Yeah.
Maybe you will look like a brother.
Just hold on, guys. We could get into a short ad break.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
And as we come back to your listeners, let me start my song again. David, you were still making a point. You and Helmut. Helmut, yeah. you were telling how you don't want to be in the friend zone.
Yeah.
David,
yeah.
You cited a friend zone analogy.
Yeah, I just indicated to say maybe a person just wants you to be friends, not to graduate to the next level. The same thing with which you are doing with mining.
I drop kicked them through the poles for the 3 points, man. Like Yanni De Beer from the Springboks against England in 1999.
And the other thing also that we should look at is the numbers.
Yeah.
To say, I want people to go into details because the president gave the regional leaders a very difficult job that they should do, especially following the line what's happening at the national level.
Mm.
If the program at the national level is economic diversification, even within your procurement, you diversify. Even if at the national level, we are too few to be poor, you must fill this gap of inequality.
Mm.
Those things must be explained in details to say, how did I comply with the directive of my masters?
Yeah.
If we're speaking about accountability at the national level, how do you fight treason within the region, which is corruption?
Yeah.
But I think from what I'm seeing, the police in Oshana region.
Now you're also using the president's same understanding of corruption. It's treason.
Yeah, it's what I wanted to say.
He even slipped it in there.
It's what I wanted to say. Yeah. And I think the observation, looking at police level, I think Oshana regional police have always a good relationship with the regional council. I don't know what happened. Maybe it's the foundation, but they always have a very good relationship. And at the north, growing up at the north, believe me, you, all the previous regional commanders, they've been exceptional.
Mm.
They've been very exceptional, especially looking at that. But the main question that Helmut asked is a question that this discussion should continue. I don't know for how long. Issue of inequality. There is no a clear plan how to deal with inequality.
No.
Because if we are not acting, we are...
Basic income grant. We keep mentioning it here. Basic income grant.
Yeah, basic income grant is one of the factors. That I can
look, if you're gonna buy beer and wine like Dwight will, that money, or Dwight can save that money, we will have money.
No, I hear you. You know, basic income grant is one of the things that can get us there.
Yeah.
Because if everybody has money, especially in the informal sector, people do not know this. The more the informal sector have money, the more the economy is growing, and the more upliftment of women taking people from poverty.
Yeah.
And I'm very angry, really angry, with economists who are saying they don't want to follow data that they do not exist. Because if you talk about Namibian economy, you're talking about an informal sector.
Yeah.
Mining is part of our economy, but we are not holding it.
Yeah.
It's in the hands of those who have capital.
Like one foot is here, but the rest of the body is in the private sector.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the data is controlled that way because...
What do you mean one foot? It's one toe. This way, the whole
the whole body, the whole foot with that toe, that toe is on, and the body is in the private sector.
Yeah. And that's why I get really very, very angry, especially when somebody stand up, whatever sector they are, and you stand up and you talk about informal sector, and after we are done with those speeches, there is no woman from informal sector that is here to save you. You are not wearing something that was made in the informal sector.
Mm. You bought it all.
You
in
bought
a
it all. You even import it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm always thanking our Minister of International Relations and our President.
No,
at least we're African.
No, our Prime Minister as well. Ask him. We yeah. did the order with me discussion. And he said, yeah. This is order with me. And everybody went like,
that was an order with me.
And then I understood what he meant.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister goes, him and Minister Shifura.
Yeah. Yeah.
They both go to specific tailors.
Yeah.
In Karatura and
yeah.
in Komasta.
Yeah.
So they use tailors. They use the MSME.
No, that is good.
Yeah.
At least if you are championing those, the representative of informal sector must
and
wear
I'm not
that.
Promoting you guys, ne?
Yeah.
Prime Minister and Minister.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you guys know.
The representative of informal sector must wear that. Even if we are very serious about Namibia.
Yeah.
These things of suit, yes, it's official. Maybe when we go to,
on international
level. International level.
Yeah.
If you wear something that was made African, maybe it's even better.
Yeah.
We were talking about, who is the guy? The deputy speaker of, National Assembly. People are now wearing what?
Tamila.
Yeah, they're wearing fugu from Ghana.
Yeah.
At least you
and
are.
He showed up there
and he showed, I did not even recognize him. But really, you are standing up.
I'm a huge fan of dashiki.
Yeah.
No, but I was sitting there going, you have so many Namibians that make Namibian things.
If our leader started doing this, if a CEO of, City of Window, just for example, I'm not saying he must wear that every day. At least you go to your tailor at what is this incubation center? There is Bokamoso and what, and they wear and buy two attire, one thing.
Mm.
Then you show up at least 1 day or 2 days with it.
Mm.
You show that at least you are starting because you are also a brand. People also be inspired.
Mm.
If you are a musician, we are just showing up on stage with hip hop with sneakers and yes, it's good.
Yeah.
But see, who is going to support us?
That's how rich I wanna be.
Yeah, you don't need a suit to meet Trump.
Yeah, you are in a suit.
Wearing sandals.
Yeah.
Wearing flip flops.
Yeah. Look, this is a picture of Trump with the Qatari sheikh.
Mm.
Yeah. And I like that sheikh's approach because you know he's sitting comfortably.
That's his traditional attire. Even, this whole suit and stuff. That's your idea of formal wear.
He's even
this is mine, and that's what I'm gonna wear.
He's even manspreading in a Qatari fashion.
Yeah. In sandals.
In flip flops.
Yep.
The Americans call it flip flops, Samuel.
Yeah, but they have maybe another
name. Yeah, but we are in Namibia.
Yeah, but I think it's really a very good conversation, especially tracking of progress. Me, I'm very, very, very serious about tracking of progress because numbers must always come together. With actions.
Yeah.
Because if you give me a number, I will still go and ask you to say, but what did you say about these numbers?
Yeah.
What went wrong?
What improved to show a reduction?
Yeah.
Like Hamoud and I started on the crime.
Yeah.
The crime apparently reduced.
Mm.
But we don't get the why.
No, it's a very interesting question that you should also ask to say what happened.
Mm.
But you must also realize that the main crimes did not improve.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Because if you reduce the number of crimes, then you have 5 serious crimes, you still have a very big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he indicated that things such as housebreaking, gender-based violence, they are still persisting in that region. But if you catch two guys who are shoplifting and people who are fighting maybe on their way from a kuka shop, but we have serious robbery in town, then you have a serious problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, you know, it also boiled down to what he said, economic inequality.
Mm.
There's nobody who advises people to go and steal. But,
wait.
Okay,
but conditions,
yeah.
And it has been proven, if you can talk to any criminologist, any sociologist, will tell you to say situation always force a person to go and survive. When that guy pick up a baboon, he took a risk to say, if I'm arrested, I'm arrested.
Mm.
But people maybe have to eat.
Do you know that it's actually within his rights?
Yeah.
It's actually within his rights.
That's just a swag.
Yeah.
No.
If a roadkill incident happens,
mm-hmm.
if a wild animal gets hit by your car,
you
may not pick it up.
Mm.
But if I'm driving behind you in my car, I can pick it up.
Yeah. No, but there is a word, man, in law. It's not that I cannot remember it because it has to do with survival.
Yeah.
To say you cannot charge a person of a crime. But I still have to get it.
When their lives were dependent upon.
Yeah. There was a what an example which was given to say you are two on an island and the person decided just to catch you and eat you for.
Okay. Cannibalize you.
There's a certain justification in law, but law students or lawyers they'll be able to tell you to say if you are two in a very difficult, desperate situation, the value of a human being is always very important compared to any other. That's why that baboon can be protected by a human
by the wildlife.
And I see the ministry even issued a statement. But if situation determine human being, we must survive first, then we start talking. Yeah, I think that is what I wanted to say.
No, it's a good thing because exceptions are always. What was that thing that I always was told in when I was working in sales? Exceptions should not become the norm. Which feeds into both of your points primarily because when we look at the normal situation in Namibia, it's the inequality, or announcing temporary jobs for that matter. But temporary jobs actually help with something because they actually build up experience. They give, they provide testimonials to those young people and they also allow for money to be earned, which the person never had. But when it comes to crime, David, and Helmut, and the camera is now on me. When it comes to crime, guys, our gender, we just have to go to a bar or sit around a braai and then we sit there caucusing something. You know, and it goes from just being a fantasy to actually being the most daring, well, potentially Hollywood-induced project that does end in loss of life. Because crime is a bad thing. But when we look at inequality, inequality is that pervasive crime that Helmut said, that you've also said, David, no one wants to touch and talk about. I have a reservation specifically with regards to also the response by societies in Namibia to interventions that the public sector tries to bring. Because I still consider the retail of the private sector, the retail sector, like these major retailers, they are the only people that seem to be hiring the most people in Namibia. Across the country.
Yeah, they are.
And they go where there is money. They won't open up a shop if there's no money in that community.
No, they are.
The downside from such a particular perspective has been, it seems like our decision makers don't utilize this example that I have been turning blue here on Eagle FM on for the past 5 years.
You know one thing I indicated? You did well when you speak about the retailers.
Yeah.
I said... And I will say it again without any fear of contradiction.
Let me show the camera back to you.
No. You know what I wanted to say is that opening of a mall in Namibia with 90% of the shops or people or the retailers or people that are operating them that are not Namibian. I don't want to say they should not be. They should all not be Namibians. But let's go to the products. With 80% or 85% of the products that are imported, that is not a solution.
Yeah,
it's a dependency that continue to kill us.
Yeah.
But let me say there was a celebration at an opening, and I don't have a problem with an opening of a mall at Korehab. That really created a lot of employment at that aspect. But when you look at when people speak about the value chain, when people about addition, value addition, they speak about creating of a job beyond a certain product. If
or the product is the result of that job creation.
Yeah. Let's say we have 20 malls just in the next 5 months within the regions in the northern part of Namibia.
Yeah.
We may celebrate, we may create maybe 500 jobs. But the question is that what other jobs did you create outside the country?
Yeah.
Which means that if you have to multiply that maybe with 700.
Yes.
Because there are people there.
Yes.
Who are working in factories so that they can ship things to Namibia.
Yes.
That's why you brought a very important point, especially when you speak about retailers. It's good, but are our products getting into those markets? And what are we doing about it? Because you can even create 200 malls, you are still going to have inequality in the country.
Definitely.
Because the more you have 200 malls in the country, the more, because they are looking at the numbers of people, the more the customer will come, then they will just depend on that. Then nobody, some of the products, we are still not doing them, or most of them we are not doing them. But I think it's a good starting point to us to say, on top of that, what can we do to make sure that we work with these guys? Because ShopRite will not tell me to say, put your things in order so that you can put your things in my shelf. They will not tell me that.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's up to
okay,
me.
Okay, Hamun
yeah.
and I, we highlighted the broccoli guy.
Yeah.
And then if he didn't call them,
yeah,
then he would never have known the opportunity was there for him.
Yeah.
But yeah. On that note, David, thank you. Helmut, thank you. This does bring us up to the end for the home run on this lovely Wednesday. Stay tuned for the next crew, that being the Kutumosha crew. Omutumwa crew. Yeah. No, because I don't know. Kutumosha keeps sticking here in my brain. On that note, guys, stay tuned for the next programming after the break.
Yeah.
See you.